welcome to Odd Trilogies with Logan and Andy. I'm Logan Somoff.
And I'm Andy Carr.
In Odd Trilogies, we take a trio of films, whether tied by cast and crew, thematic elements, or even numerical order, and we usually discuss the good, the bad, and the weird surrounding each one. And today is a very special episode. We just did our Circus Planet of the Apes trilogy, mm-hmm. and we thought, you know, that wasn't serious enough. That wasn't as profound enough as a trilogy, even though those films are very dark, very serious.
Yeah.
Have some beautiful moments in terms of, you know, blockbuster energy.
And just too typical.
Just, yeah, it's normal shit. We really wanted to do something that just, you know, screams Maverick, screams just out the gate, something different. And so we decided that to really just change up the game for us and really in Odd Trilogies fashion, Andy decided to create his own version of a trilogy that once I heard it, it was momentous.
Well, in terms of our kind of self-curated trilogies, it's probably one of our most tenuous yet. and I apologize in advance for that. I had this idea a little while ago, basically when I heard that the most recent movie in this trilogy was announced, I thought, oh, well, that would be an interesting kind of examination of one single actor, one single performer is kind of cornering the market of a certain area of the film industry. And so today we are talking about one Chris Pratt, whom I'm sure you know, either from Parks and Rec, Guardians of the Galaxy,
The Tomorrow War,
his number one hit. He's all over the place. He's the goofy, lovable, macho protagonist, not at all controversial, is not involved with any organizations that people don't like.
Also just a Schwarzenegger by marriage.
You're right.
I constantly remind myself is an actual thing.
Right. But there's one...
Our guest is already just... his nose just trying to process that.
There is one particular quirk about Chris Pratt's career that I find fascinating, and that is studios, for some reason, interest in him as a leading man in IP-driven animated films.
Today
we are talking about Chris Pratt's animated IP dynasty. We're talking about the Lego movie from 2014. We're talking about the Super Mario Brothers from 2023. And we're talking about the Garfield movie from this year.
Yes.
Iconic properties with big mainstream animated films, all starring Chris Pratt. And we're going to figure out why.
Yeah, I think every year we have moments where we go, we're not going to pick trilogies just because of a new release. We'll do that sometimes.
Yeah.
But not all the time. And I have to say, I think this is the one that most people wouldn't have guessed in terms of new releases.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Garfield, of course.
Garfield, yeah, of course.
Yes, so. And we're very blessed that we have an extra voice in the ring today. We are joined by a very special guest, Mr. Austin Webster. Hello, Austin.
Hello.
It's good to have you with us. Austin has actually recorded an episode with us before.
That's right. That's
unfortunately, right. It never saw the light of day due to technical issues.
The only Odd Trilogies prequel mainline episode, the only one we've ever done, where literally the technical difficulties were so egregious in a way that we couldn't comprehend. There's literally a folder on my fucking computer that it just says lost episodes, and it just has Monkey Bone sadly sitting in that folder.
At some point, we got to bring Monkey Bone back.
We do.
We'll have to do a redux, Monkey Bone redux.
Because we had a lot of fun conversations that weren't just 9/11 joke based.
Yeah.
It could be a Brendan Fraser animal related trilogy.
Yeah.
You got the whale. You got Monkey Bone, and you have Furry Vengeance.
Furry Vengeance, yeah.
I love how the one that doesn't tie in the most to that is the whale, and
Furry
you
Vengeance.
Use that as your song. You didn't hesitate to say, oh, by the way, the whale. And that makes most people out there...
I mean, it's in the title, you
yes,
know.
Yes,
But yeah, Austin, since this is formally your introduction on the podcast, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and all that.
Yeah, so I work in the film industry, which means I know everything and all my opinions are factual, actually.
Correct, yeah.
So I actually know that Chris Pratt saw a producer run over a small child on Hollywood Boulevard, and that's why he keeps getting these roles.
Okay.
But no, my my.
That was a good episode, everybody.
We're not even fucking 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, fucking knew this was gonna happen.
But what I do for a living is I'm a focus puller. I'm a first assistant camera on set, which is basically the position that runs the camera department. So I keep things in focus. I assist the director of photography and the camera operators. And I've worked in Los Angeles, Atlanta, and now I'm based here in Indianapolis, working across the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of commercial corporate work. Probably the most notable work I do is for All Elite Wrestling on TBS and TNT. I work in film, so it honestly has soured a bit of my opinions on films and stuff to begin with.
Made you a little bit of a cynic.
As much as I want to. Yeah. But, when they announce that there's a Garfield movie, it piques my interest. When they announce that there's a Garfield movie starring Chris Pratt, I know that I need to take work off so that I can go and be
that's a holiday.
Butts and seats for the Garfield movie starring Chris Pratt from
just
Sony
in time
Pictures Animation.
For Memorial Day weekend.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the thing about Chris Pratt that's also fascinating about these three films is that prior to the Lego movie, he has 2 animated credits and that's it.
Yes.
Those 2 animated credits, in case no one knows out there, because I didn't fucking know until I looked it up, just to make sure. Because most people, before the Lego movie, because the year the Lego movie comes out is 2014, which is basically the year of Pratt in terms of popularity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because while he was popular in Parks and Rec, very much so is Andy Dwyer. He's phenomenal.
He was the comic relief.
He's
the goofball. Yeah.
Lovable himbo in every way, shape, and form in that show. 2014 is the year of the Lego movie and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep.
Yep.
So it's like one of the big animated hits for Warner Brothers and then one of the best Marvel films to come out, especially in those early phases.
Yeah.
And then before that, though, most people would probably know him from, I believe he was on Everwood, which was a late 90s, early 2000s
right.
show. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, in terms of a comedic sense, also probably knew him from The O.C., which mm-hmm. he has an iconic, quote-unquote iconic scene to The O.C., where it's like he basically plays a guitar naked. He's butt-ass naked, and he plays mm-hmm. like a hippie roommate of one of the characters. I think he's on 3 episodes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But before the Lego movie, the 2 things that he did that was animated, he did The Batman, the WB series. He did an episode of that.
Oh, just a one-off role.
Just a one-off. And then he's in 2 to 3 episodes of Ben 10 Ultimate Alien.
Wow.
And I found a clip of his performance in Ultimate Alien, and it is the most serious Pratt I think I've seen. At least and especially in an animated sense. Like, he is playing it straight-faced in the Ben 10 show. And it kind of looks, it doesn't look like Pratt, but it's like, that does look like a Chris Pratt voiced character, the
right.
way they do that. But yeah, like Chris Pratt as an actor is, it's hilarious to say because a lot of his filmography very recently seems pretty much what you expect from someone who's like, I'm going to curate my image. I'm going to curate my filmography. I'm going to be more of a producer on my stuff. And the last few years have kind of felt like that's exactly what the goal is with certain things, especially mm-hmm. with
he's in his Dwayne Johnson era.
Yes,
yeah,
he's kind of like I would liken him more to like a Will Smith type.
Sure,
of like he doesn't really take on almost any roles that are going to challenge him creatively or as a performer
or challenge his image, like
or challenge
his public perception.
His image is why people are going to show up. Also like Dwayne Johnson, but it's also, very much like Will Smith, who also started doing a lot of voice roles
mm-hmm.
after he gained a lot of popularity.
Yeah.
Different route, of course, and, Will Smith's done a lot of other roles that have, challenged him creatively. And as a performer, I mean, he's won Oscars for mm-hmm. his performances, while Pratt is still kind of in the, has a very manufactured image, because of other controversies and stuff that have surrounded him in his career,
mm-hmm.
but he is a very manufactured, very, very like manicured, very careful with what he takes on and what he does in a safe way, but also because he doesn't have to, because people will show up for it, no matter what it is.
He is one of those few mega names that we have that will just put butts in seats just because Chris Pratt's in it.
And also, strangely enough, in terms of the Chrises that are in the MCU, he is strangely the one I never expected to be out of all the Chrises that got popular through the MCU. He's the one that takes the safest route, I think, out of all three.
In terms of his choices?
Like the trifecta of like Hemsworth, Evans, and Pratt.
Oh, you mean like the roles he takes and stuff? Yeah.
Where it's like with like right now, because like we literally are... Just for context, we are recording this after seeing Furiosa, Max Saga, as a trio, and I never would have guessed out of all the Chrises out of the MCU that Thor would be the one who'd be like, I will play villains, fuck it, let's
do a hammy, like, over-the-top villain,
Especially with, like, again, Pratt, before the Lego movie, even, like, kind of in the same Parks and Rec, like, he's in a few films, like, the first time I ever saw Chris Pratt was in Wanted. The James McAvoy.
Oh, yeah.
He is James McAvoy's roommate that sleeps with McAvoy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
The first shot in Wanted is Chris Pratt's bare ass. And that's a lot of people probably were introduced to him through that, but didn't realize it was him.
Right.
And then he did a film with Channing Tatum between Lego Movie and that film called 10 Years, which is a high school reunion film.
Yeah. Oh.
He kind of plays like a douche. Like a shitty guy that's like, he's not a mean person. He's just clearly like in his I used to be something in high school era. Plays it well. And then like ultimately the film that kind of technically propelled him, but really it was this film. It was really the Lego movie that really propelled him initially. But like he was also in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
Which was a big film. And like he's part of SEAL Team 6 in that version of that. Like,
yeah, I mean that was that team.
I also
probably
remember him being in the trailer. This is a very weird, I never saw the movie, but the movie Delivery Man with Vince Vaughn, where he was a sperm donor.
Yeah, women.
Chris Pratt is featured in a trailer because that was in the early seasons of Parks and Rec when that was coming out, which was also before Zero Dark Thirty, because we still had Fat Pratt at the time.
So I
remember him being featured pretty prominently in those trailers, and I was like, oh, the guy from Parks and Rec. I know he did movies.
Well, the thing too is he also, that just jogged my memory, talking about fucking trailers for films, he's also Jason Segel's best friend in The 5-Year Engagement.
Yeah.
Which is a Segel-Blunt film where it's like, I believe Alison Brie is Blunt's best friend, who is also in Lego Movie.
Yeah.
And then Pratt plays the chubby, silly best friend to Segel in that film. And that's the roles you would think he would be doing at this point, like era-wise in his career. But fascinating enough, no. Like Andy said, it's in the last decade we have had Pratt as three different icons of varying degrees.
Yeah.
And in terms of popularity, in terms of mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, he is the face in some way, shape, or form in this film of Lego.
Yeah.
He plays fucking Mario.
Right.
And then he's the comic strip king himself, Garfield. And
yeah.
It's fascinating to think that like I don't think there's any actor genuinely alive that you would look at them and go, they could do Mario, Garfield, and like a Lego person.
Uh-huh.
Like that is such a, clearly that is just like, he's doing these roles because he's a good actor, he's popular, he's got that synergy, and he's willing to do it.
And Lego Movie was such a great fit at the time when it was announced in like 2012.
Yeah.
That movie had been in development since 2008. When they announced it and they were shopping around, Warner Brothers and Village Roadshow finally like picked it up in like 2011 or something to start producing it, or maybe it was 2012, and they announced Chris Pratt as the lead role, Emmett, for the film, and it was going to work great because it was just like some normal guy. This was also before he was, I think, announced to be in Guardians of the Galaxy, but he was the Parks and Rec guy. It was one of NBC's like leading sitcoms, and... You know, he was the perfect fit to play just average Joe, like, and Joe Schmo, who, you know, becomes special.
And just kind of a bumbling goofball.
Yeah,
like,
he got to do the Chris Pratt thing.
Yeah.
It worked. And really, at the time, when you look back at it, think about it, and look at the cast, the movie was more so sold on the rest of the supporting cast who had joined it. But also, the IP was strong enough, which is, in most of the cases of these three films, the IP is really going to do majority of the legwork, but how you get people reintroduced is going to be the cast. And I think it even like starts to slowly get, like, as we go in order of the films, the cast is still strong, like in Garfield, but it's not as strong as Mario Movie, which isn't as strong as the Lego Movie because it doesn't have to be, because you have Chris Pratt. because Chris Pratt in the Lego Movie is supported by Will Ferrell, Elizabeth Banks, Morgan Freeman, Alison Brie, Will Arnett. You have this giant, like, super cast.
Yeah.
But then Mario, you know, you get to, like, Jack Black, Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Day, Keegan-Michael Key.
Fred Armisen.
Fred
Seth
Armisen.
Seth Rogen.
And then you get to Garfield, which is, you know, there's Sam Jackson, sure, but that's not even really that promoted.
Well, the press has been far more focused on Pratt.
Yeah, it's been so focused on Pratt, and
part of that's probably because Garfield is not as strong of an IP these days as those other two, which we'll get more into later. But it is kind of interesting. We're talking about this kind of because Pratt has sort of become the poster child for kind of the cynical studio approach to adapting a popular IP into an animated film.
Yes.
Because Mario and Garfield are kind of, at least on the surface, very much examples of that. The Lego Movie, not so much. It's actually, I think we'll all agree it's a great movie, and Pratt actually fits the bill really well.
It's really shocking to just like, because I watched these out of order. I don't know how you two were in terms of because I watched, basically, in my opinion, I watched the worst one first, which is Super Mario Brothers, which is it's not a bad film. It's just not.
Well,
it's
teeters.
So here's the thing. I think it's meh.
Yeah.
But I would honestly, like, going from that onward, like, it is fascinating just how, like, you know, with the joke of Pratt being like, oh, I know exactly who could play the next Black Panther. And this is like around the time that the Super Mario, so like the meme of Pratt could be anybody.
Yeah.
And be any ethnicity.
Yeah.
Any race, like any, like, it just was so.
Which ultimately that was kind of the seed that sparked this idea for me. It was like the kind of the meme of, oh, Chris Pratt's going to play anybody and everybody now.
Because it's just fascinating.
The Boondocks movie coming out. It's going to be Chris Pratt playing all the roles in the Boondocks.
Yeah, like it's. I mean, it's fascinating to think about that, especially in the span of like the Super Mario movie, but then going back to Lego movie and just being like, what really sells those films, thankfully, or at least what the priorities were in those films, it just is the actual, it's what the film itself shows before the performance in terms of like with Lego movie, it's like there is a world where the Lego movie is still as good as it is without Pratt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the biggest accomplishment of the Lego movie at the time was it was really one of, if not the first movie to be like, here's the IP that is purely just like a toy. I mean, you obviously have Transformers and such. Transformers had, you know, the cartoons, G.I. Joe cartoons. It was the kind of the modern era's version of like, this is a toy where we are making a movie, a jump to movies out of the toy.
Yeah.
And that's what the selling point is that you like the toy, so you will like the movie.
Yeah.
And it was a huge shock that, you know, it had heart behind it because they also had to try to avoid a lot of the cynicism that was going to come with that of IP being translated to now a commercial product, to a commercial film. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller being behind that, they both really did a great job delivering that. But it's also because they had to, and this is probably my own cynicism, but I feel like the further you get with like Mario and Garfield, the less that they had to actually try to give heart or put a lot into the film actually make it like, look, no, it's not just cynical of we are capitalizing off the IP. Like, we actually believe in the heart of it or whatever the mission statement is of said IP, and we're bringing it to the table. And that's why Mario movie for me, like, was such a big failure, is that it didn't have any of the heart because it didn't have to. It just had to.
It was coasting
similar things and throw it at you, which Illumination was perfect for.
Another part of that too, and this is something that, like, by the point the Lego movie comes out, there are technically Lego films or Lego based products, but they are straight to DVD.
You have like Bionicle, you have Clutch Powers, you have Lego Ninjago TV series,
and at that point it's like, hilariously enough, it is the Lego movie has to sell the idea that a Lego movie can even work in a theater. Whereas with Super Mario Brothers and Garfield, all that really has to do on a base level is prove that they're not as shitty as the previous iterations.
Versions,
It's like, because honestly, it's like, there's been a great conversation in some way, shape, or form about just like, and this is such a Patrick H. Willems like thing of just like, the Super Mario Brothers Illumination film is better than the 90s one. but is it really more interesting?
Yeah,
the answer
right.
is no.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, even I would even argue, even though we liked the new Garfield movie with Pratt, like, I would even argue that that film is not even as interesting as, like, the live-action ones.
Sure,
just, like,
sure.
trying to, because, like, watching how they tried to figure mm-hmm. out how to make a lazy cat have an adventure, would clearly, Garfield would never want to do that.
Yeah.
In standard
yeah.
sense. And find the motivation from that. It is fascinating to see, like, in the original, like, in the Bill Murray ones, it's like, someone's really fascinated by this fat cat. And this cat.
yeah.
And also,
yeah.
he hates Odie.
Yeah,
whereas
I mean.
The new one, it's just like, give him a dad. And that's, yeah. like, all it really is, and it, yeah. like, still works.
It could have basically been any character.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Because yeah. that's been the big joke, too, with the Garfield movie, is it should have been a Heathcliff film.
right.
I've been
yeah.
seeing that all
right.
over the place.
Yeah.
But, like, right. with the Lego movie, it's, like, it is, I think it's genuinely bold, and I think you guys would agree, the fact that, like, the lead in that is just Lego City Construction Man.
Yeah.
The fact that it's just, like, they didn't outright have Ornette's Batman as the lead. They didn't mm-hmm. have Tatum's Superman.
Yeah.
Small but delightful cameo in the
well
film.
And it's specifically not, I mean, being that it is just a kind of all-encompassing Lego movie, there is no iconic Lego character, you know, there's no like face
no,
of Lego
yeah.
unless you're talking about like the IPs that Lego has licensed, you know, like
yeah.
if they were making
which
a Lego Star Wars or Lego Batman
bring into
which
the
they leverage
and yes. mock in a way that also fits what ends up being the ultimate reveal of the film.
Yeah.
Spoilers for a 10-year-old film. But, you know, that it has been a human child in control of it the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which adds to the playfulness and adds to the whole, you know, the heart of the film that, like, this is a toy at the end of the day.
Right.
And, you know, it also having a commentary that goes deeper into, like, the Lego collecting community of, like,
yes.
assholes, adult fans of Legos. And,
yeah.
And how they...
I forgot
you know,
there's an acronym
glue
for that.
Yeah, Apple. And yeah, and when you build up the whole thing, it's called a mock, my own creation. To about how they glue it together and they like forget that this is a toy at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's not that deep. And
right.
it has this beautiful heart to it that blows up and it uses the IP really creatively, but it also never has to sell itself on the IP besides the fact that it's just the toy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it still never loses sight of what the heart of the actual product is. I'm trying to say this in a way that doesn't sound like super commercial, but like it
well,
doesn't lose sight of like
well,
the
no,
initial
but
goal
it
is,
is
we are making a movie based off this toy and the toy brand's mission statement is to be creative to
yeah.
rebuild
the,
things
the
to
closest,
like
yeah.
it is successful very much on the same level that people rightfully praised Barbie for last
yeah.
year
yeah.
it's leveraging this very corporate commercial product focusing on the spirit of the activity of playing with this toy rather than like cashing in on all the you know all the recognizable brand items even though those are there
yeah
that's not what it's
and
ultimately about really, and it's actually making something meaningful out of this commercial thing
it's also
yeah.
not letting the nostalgia of the things you do pull out
yeah
overtake the actual narrative
right
again the closest thing I think in terms of Lego brand in the first film that is the closest to like the nostalgia of just a Lego made product
uh-huh.
is Benny. It's the 80s space.
Yeah, you're right.
And Octane. Snapped.
And Octane.
Because Octane was the first thing that Lego revealed
yes.
when they started the Lego
That's
City
right.
in the 80s.
Yeah.
And they add the minifigures later in the like I think it was 84 is when they brought the minifigures to life.
Yep.
But Octane was one of the gas stations and it was their fake little company
uh-huh.
with the space figures. The space figures came went with the introduction of the first minifigure in like 84, 85 ish. But Octane was always there in the original town. So they were so genuine with the brands and their deep cuts here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Here's the Lego brands that we are presenting to you before we even introduce any IP into the film. Because Batman doesn't come in until about like 25, 30 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
yeah.
He's rescuing Wildstyle and Emmett.
Yeah.
But up until then, it's completely brand new characters that they're throwing at you. And it's nothing but Lego IP. Because they are using their first act to establish
right.
that this is a Lego movie,
right?
Yeah,
and we are not going to have this crutch here.
Yeah, the first
we'll make fun of that stuff later.
Yeah,
the first 10 to 15 minutes, even though it's not all original, like 80s, 70s Lego designs, it does feel like something your parents might have had
uh-huh.
in the beginning. Like, and then when Wildstyle shows up, and it's like that is at least
2000s. right.
That is
yeah.
clearly not a. And then you get to the Old West stuff, and it's like, oh, this is. Yeah, it's like watching that, you're like, yeah, you can't really do a Lego movie with, like, pepperoni from like the Lego Island games from like the fucking PC.
Yeah.
You basically just have to make fun of the fact that Lego doesn't have a mascot other than the yellow head and the titular smile. And the fact that the film itself even makes fun of that when they ask all of Emmett's friends, what's like, would he ever do this? And they're like, I don't even know who this guy is. He just has a normal yellow blank face.
Yeah, he's default. Like,
what is so good?
What is so funny? Because, you know, I guess for listeners who don't know, as you guys do know, and as there are tons of Lego surrounding us here at my house.
I made a critical error in introducing Austin. I forgot to mention he's a massive Lego nerd.
I'm a massive Lego collector. One of my special interests, very special interests. But at the time when the movie was announced, I was on so many Lego forums. There was the Brick Fan, hosted by Alan Tran. There was this other one called FBTB from Bricks to Boffins.
That was
a more Star Wars like Lego focused one. But they all had Lego news, and when the movie was announced in 2008, a lot of people, their theory was that the mascot was actually going to be the Lego Club magazine mascot named Max, who had a light blue t-shirt that had a little Lego patch on it, if I remember correctly, dark blue, like navy blue sleeves, and khaki pants, and like swooshy, like boy band hair. And there's a YouTube channel called Paganimation from David Pagano in New York, and he did a lot of these animated shorts in the days, and he eventually got hit up to work for Lego doing stop motion for them.
Oh, okay.
And he would do a lot of animated bits for Lego Club Magazine with Max. It was like Adventures of Max. So people were speculating at first that when it said like a nobody, that Max was actually going to be the main character of it, and they were going to lean into this is who our mascot is.
Yeah.
I think to this day, he might still be the mascot for Lego Club, but for a solid like 10, 15 years, he was the mascot, to where that was the speculation at first.
Right.
But then to connect that back to Pagano actually helped organize a contest that is seen in the end of the Lego movie when Lord Business is watching everyone rebuild stuff.
Uh-huh.
Where they ran a competition to do a 10-second stop motion clip of people animating their figures turning normal items into creatures or something different, something fun.
Yeah.
And Pagano has a small thing featured in there. Pagano also animated the end credits sequence.
Yes, I knew that.
Of the Lego movie. So that's actual stop motion. But he was a consultant also for the contest there. So all that to say that Lego did almost have a mascot of sorts. So they kind of like PlayStationed it, where they had a mascot that like was pretty beloved, but they didn't do anything with it when they had the chance to.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating too to think about when it comes to Legos. It feels almost out of the three of these properties and IPs that Pratt basically heads is the fact that Lego is the closest thing to feeling like, well, this of course should be cinematic.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like around the time as a consensus generally that, oh, now it's kind of, we now understand how people can look at clay balls and turn those into like Chicken Run or Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah.
Around the time that was kind of like people were getting used to that. That's what it seemed like Lego animations just skyrocketed to the point of like, oh, by the time that the film comes out in 2014, it's like, oh, of course. Like, I made a fucking Lego animation in middle school. Nearly killed my parents. But like, it was something like people just did a lot of.
Yeah.
Well, really enjoyed. Another really fun connection is that the magic portal that the kid throws Emmett into, that's a clear reference, again, just showing how much like craft they put into this, because they felt the need that they had to avoid the cynicism. The magic portal is a reference to a 1980s, late 80s short film from an Australian guy named Sydney, who did this 20-minute, it's considered the first ever brick film, like Lego stop motion film called The Magic Portal, about this crew of a spaceship that finds a magic portal on their spaceship.
Yes.
And they walk through it. And it's a blend of Lego stop motion and actual clay stop motion and live action too, all in one.
Interesting.
So the fact that they combine all that, there's so many layers to what Lord and Miller did to really show how much they cared about, you know, this IP, but also the fact that they were trying to replicate the stop motion throughout all this too. Down to them designing everything in a program called Lego Digital Designer that Lego had made in the mid-2000s for people to download their PCs, build your own set. You could connect it to the Lego shop, and they would send you your set with your own instructions based on how you put the pieces together in what order with all of it. It would price it based on the part, all these things. Like, there's so many layers to love there. And then you get like the fucking Mario movie where there's like nothing there. And they're riding on the fact that it's one, Mario, it's two, Illumination. These are the Minion people.
Right.
And now we're also at the time Mario movie comes out, we're 8 years separated from the Lego movie. Chris Pratt has been a successful Marvel Cinematic Universe, staple. He was successful with Parks and Rec, of course. Uh-huh. He's done Tomorrow War had already come out at that point.
Also, Jurassic World had taken off. Yeah.
He had also succeeded with, and also with Jurassic World having its Lego IP and stuff too. He's just raking tons of money. Chris Pratt has some of them. Is one of the actors that has the most Lego figures too.
That makes sense.
By the way,
yeah.
He has Emmett. He has Owen from the Jurassic World trilogy. Yeah. He has Star-Lord, and I think those are the main three, but I think it's enough where he ties.
Did they make a Lego set of his self-parody character from Lego Movie 2?
They did. Yes. They did. Rex.
Yeah,
yes.
Rex.
He has four Lego minifigures, like... and I think that is the most that any person has had of any actor. So it's funny that it all started with the Lego movie is then what led to him getting more minifigures of himself, which is crazy. But now you're 8 years separated. He has all these other IPs under his belt. He's still profiting off the Lego movie because of his likeness.
Of course,
being used from all these other places and everything. So why wouldn't you cast Chris Pratt when he was within the last decade now, one of the in the prime example of IP children's movie, box office success?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do as well. Because again, I should also address the Lego in the room, the Lego elephant in the room, because I know some people out there are going to be like, well, Logan, there is the sequel to the Lego movie. Why is that not a part of this? And it's like, to be completely honest, I feel like we could do, if we wanted to, a trilogy of like the quote-unquote fall of Lego movies in terms of
two and the Batman and the Ninjago movie.
Yeah, because what's so crazy about and also we just do a prequel just on the second part, because that performance... It is hilarious to think in the 5 years between Lego Movie and the second part, it goes from Pratt being the quintessential everyman that can just blend in as construction man and make him lovable.
Yeah.
And, he's not yet superstardom, to second part making fun of how much of a superstar he has become since that first film.
Mm-hmm.
And also Jurassic World. And that performance, I
think.
Them
having
is
the raptors
unique.
And the light, the.
Yeah.
In Rex, his counterpart that he plays, like the little raptors that he controls and stuff, too.
And, like, they control the ship, I believe he's on,
too.
And, like, it's,
they're the pilots of it and everything.
And that it could do its own little episode on, because, like, Pratt has to do double duty in that film. And also, in the second part, at least when I remember, Emmett feels more like a side character for most of the film rather than the lead. It's more of a wild style film.
Yeah, it's a lot more about wild style.
It's really hard because, they don't have, with Emmett, he is just kind of a doofus. Lovable doofus is the whole thing. So they do focus more on wild style. They also focus more on the sister in it.
But I will say, it was great to kind of go back to Lego Movie after Super Mario Brothers movie. Because like with Super Mario Brothers movie, Pratt's performance, especially this time going through it, I can tell that there is effort. Mm-hmm. I think the first time when we saw it together, it was hard to kind of really discern how much meat and potatoes does he put in the stew in terms of like when it comes to Mario. Because the big thing too, I think what makes the Lego movie that much better is that the Lego company, it's not that they didn't care. It's very clearly that they're like, well, you have the guys that helped with How I Met Your Mother and Clone High involved in this. And they clearly
and
have
with a Chance of Meatballs.
And Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. So they have a vision that we have read and we liked, and we're going to let them do that and not be too pushy. Cut to Nintendo, who has been burned plenty of times with ideas of doing this, and when they do come to Resurgence, it doesn't work. And so, Detective Pikachu is, the first time a Nintendo type product, comes out in theaters and works in full. And so it's, they are clearly, let's make it pretty clear. This is someone who loves the Mario franchise. Mario's characteristics are vague for a reason.
Uh-huh.
They are meant to be, he is jovial, he goes wahoo, he says Mamma Mia because he's vaguely Italian, and he wears a plumber's outfit that's red, and he stomps on heads. Like, there is,
Nintendo. He stops on Goombas. He's Italian. He is Italian.
It is like Nintendo. Nintendo, I believe, genuinely still think it's still funny because the movie's like 30 years old at this point. But like, they were so burned by how the Super Mario Brothers movie came out and it was nothing what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
That they, at this point in time, after that, they're like, we have been betrayed by the film industry.
Yeah.
We will not give it back unless it's animated. We are, Shigeru Miyamoto's a fucking EP on it. We got to make sure we are ingrained.
Yeah.
And it's not to the point where they're like, we're going to make a tie-in game to this movie. There's nothing to fucking tie into this.
Yeah.
It is just like, we want to make sure that like, if there are references, it goes through us. Which is honestly, it sounds like is the case when Nintendo has given their IPs for things. Because like, the big thing about like Wreck-It Ralph was that Mario was supposed to give Ralph big motivational speech.
Yeah.
And then Nintendo shut that down.
Right.
Because like every time they would, I think if I remember correctly with Wreck-It Ralph, anytime they even changed Bowser's design a millimeter, like just a little bit, like just a little pixel here and there.
Yeah.
They had to get a go-ahead by Nintendo.
Yeah,
they were so worried by another property, especially an American company, trying to touch their stuff that they want to make sure that it's absolutely crystal clear. So, of course, without surprise, they choose the Kings of Minions motion blur and easy turnaround times.
Yeah.
And also the Universal Comcast baby, like animated beloved.
But Illumination. Also ties into... We have Nintendo World at Universal Studios. Well.
Yes.
So yeah. that's synergy, you know.
Yeah, there's if we go clearly a deal there.
They're also going to promote the world. We're going to make even more money and have the experience and all of this.
Which, if we ever open up a Patreon, I think one of the high tiers should be pay for our Nintendo World trip. And then we should record a Nintendo World. Illegally, there we go. Of course. There's no way.
Illegally.
Yeah.
Could you imagine just like trying to like go through Universal Corporation? Just like, can we do our podcast?
Right.
Hello, they just already hang up. But no, it's just because, I think I would honestly say with all three of these films, it is to varying degrees, but it is that feeling with all three films of like, I can't believe that they're doing this. And it's it's working with an asterisk next to it.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like with Mario, it's working at the baseline level.
Yeah.
It is everything.
Absolute minimum.
I will be completely honest, this rewatch of Mario, I felt like I was the most engaged, and that's mainly because I was doing work while watching it. And I could not look, I could look down for a little bit. Usually anytime there was a needle drop, which is way too often in a Mario movie.
Yeah.
And also I don't think any of the needle drops really work in that film. No. So like anytime a needle drop happened, I would just
Work because you have a franchise that has some of the most iconic music of all time.
This really,
and you don't use the only any of it.
The only thing that really genuinely pisses me off about the Mario movie, and this is again the fucking fans and us, is like the fact that they have Koji Kondo, who has games that he has basically been like, I'm going to make entire soundtracks out of one motif, and I'm just going to make that motif work all the way through, and it rips, and it slaps, and Koji Kondo is credited because they basically just use the motifs in the Brian Tyler score, and they just should have hired Kondo.
Yeah,
they should have just had him do it. And
it it's to be honest, it's kind of the same thing with Pratt as Mario.
Yeah,
it's like he's fine.
We should probably
he's
talk
serviceable.
About that too.
Well, I'll kind of back up a little bit and go broad, and then get more specific. But like, I mean, what we're basically saying here is the thing that distinguishes, say, or separates the Lego movie from these other two is kind of the same thing that separates Pratt's performance in the Lego movie versus the latter two, which is, you know, intent, deliberate, earnest, you know, thought. Chris Pratt is well cast in the Lego movie because it was a role... not literally, but it was a role built for him, you know. It's playing to his strengths, whereas Mario and Garfield, it's like he's just cast for his popularity.
Yeah,
he's cast because he's gonna make them money, and and the performance,
and that's their that
like,
is their ethos or their approach to the entire movie is we're gonna cash in on what's, you know, what people will show up to see.
And it's very similar, again, to like also with Chris Pratt's performance. Again, I can't speak to his psyche, or I don't know the guy personally. Can't be in his head. Don't know. But like, it does really seem like the Lego movie,
he had to give more of a shit because like he had Zero Dark Thirty. He had a prestige film under him, but he didn't have anything that was really making money yet. He was on an NBC like sitcom, but like the transition from TV to movie star is a really difficult one.
Right.
So he had to give it all. Now you get 8 years later, and he's the star of, you know, three different franchises. Well, you just give him Mario. He's like, oh, cool, that's the video game, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, everyone loves Mario. Why
any one of his properties he's involved in could go belly up, and he's still like, well, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the casting is pretty clear in terms of, like, in the Lego movie, it's clearly people who are good at voice acting mixed with prestige actors that, like, will make people turn heads, but those people will not give it a phoned-in performance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Mario Brothers, it is a lot of people being like, I'm making films for my kids' energy. Whether that is the same thing or not, but, like, because, again, like, I think Jack Black's kids are, like, teens at this point.
At least.
So it's, like, with Pratt, it's clear that, like, this is an IP that kids will love. Kids are part of my brand in terms of, like, you know, with Jurassic World.
Yeah.
With Lego movie, of course, let's go for it. And with the Garfield movie, it has some of that energy too, but a lot of like the minor quote unquote cast members like Cecily Strong, Bowen Yang, Hannah Waddingham, like Brett Goldstein, like we have two fucking Ted Lasso people.
right.
Like it looks like they're in it because it's like clearly it's because of the popularity of, you know, SNL for Cecily and Bowen and Ted Lasso for Waddingham and Goldstein, but like being able to have a little fun with it.
Yeah.
Because the big stars in that are Pratt, Jackson, and then Holt as a distant third.
And Ving Rhames.
Rhames.
I put Holt as a fourth because, like, Holt, like...
Yeah, that was the biggest
Holt
shot,
also
too.
Does such, like... If anything, he's one of the people that gives... He gives way more of a shit about his performance than, like...
Yeah.
Than Pratt, because, like, I had no idea that was Holt until the credits were, like... I know Roland, we're all like, that's fucking Nicholas Holt. Like, because he just changes his voice.
Yeah,
and, like,
I think they do. Yeah, they pitch it a little bit here and there. Because, like, it's... He tries his damnedest to make his voice even higher for John's, and it's clear that, like, at times it feels like it hurts his voice to get to that point. And there's also, is it Harvey Guillen? Or Guillen?
Oh,
From What We Do in the Shadows.
He was
he's
Perito in Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. He's fucking great in The Last Wish. And the fact that he plays not a non-verbal, but a non-speaking role, basically, in this film, commits to Odie.
Yeah.
And is so good, like... The Garfield, the three of us did not expect when we were going to go see the Garfield movie that we were amping ourselves up to be like, oh boy, we're going to see how this is going to be in just
more dog shit. Yeah.
There's an ensemble that cares.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it saves the film per se, but it still is like, oh wow, this, like, these are fun performances. And and when it comes to like the Mario movie, it's like when Anya Taylor-Joy shows up, it's like, that's cool.
Yeah,
Jack Black's the best performance,
but he's also just doing Jack Black. Yeah, he's not really attempting.
So slightly like
it really
is more gravelly.
It's a little more like this. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. It's like he's not changing it a ton.
It really is funny that so many people were genuinely trying to push Peaches as an Oscar contender when that's literally Black's career.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's literally just like, the worst Tenacious D song you've ever heard.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And of course it got a lyrical Lemonade music video, and it's fucking like this over.
God.
Like,
yeah.
Again, like when it comes to Garfield and when it comes to Lego Movie, there are no performances in any one of those films that I dislike. If anything, there's just like, oh, there could have been a bit more here.
But you say Garfield and Lego
performance,
yeah.
Huh? In Garfield and Lego,
yeah. Well, as in Mario Brothers, I fucking hate Fred Armisen.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't think that casting for Cranky Kong is good.
Charlie Day, of all people, as Luigi, like, he's like trying at the lead. And Pratt, even like in Garfield, is trying, like, when he does the Garfield bit, which Garfield's whole bit is like 1-2 break the fourth wall. When he does the break the fourth wall bit, he like commits to a degree where like it works for Garfield. But Mario, there's just never any sense of like, I don't have to do anything other than just be like kind of chipper. Oh, I'm Mario. What are we doing? Oh, wow. I'm like stupid idiot, but I'm going to be a hero in the end.
It is
which
fun.
Is Pratt's brand.
And then every sixth line, throw a tiny bit of like Italian twang on it.
Yeah. But what's even funnier too is like that.
I need
even,
to get back to Brooklyn.
They don't even think that that's much of an Italian twang because like in the very beginning of the film is when they have the Mario Brothers commercial.
Yeah.
Which is what people thought the entire film was going to be.
Yep. Yep.
And that's their version of what they think people were going to wait for and hate.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time when Pratt was announced, people were going to be like, this motherfucker is just going to keep going, Mamma Mia, oops, drops the spaghetti, like, yeah, all the fucking time.
It would have been more interesting.
But I do love, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, at least the directors and the writers were aware that, like, once the commercial ends, they're like, oh, was that a little too much? Like, it's not even that funny of a joke, but it's like, okay, at least they're aware. They're like, Pratt, they didn't get an actual, like, Italian guy. Or at least if he is Italian, it's not something where it's like, like, you would think of, like an Andrew Schultz kind of situation.
Yeah.
Or, there's even a Sebastian Maniscalco, who's,
yeah,
like...
Maniscalco,
he's
the, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. He's the Wrecking Crew guy. Yeah. The Wrecking Crew reference. You would think that, like, if they were going to cast someone who's going to really ham it up, or they wanted them to ham it up in an Italian way, they would feel like it would be less controversial if they had gotten an Italian.
But then they go to the Italian,
like,
family dinner where everyone's like, so fucking, Mamma Mia, Gabagool, Tony Soprano. And then Chris Pratt's like, hey, I'm a plumber.
Yeah.
So you got everyone going around being like, hey, yo, pass it to me, the meatballs. Hey, we're starting a plumbing business, mom and dad. Hey, oh, that's a great thing for you, your son. It's like, it's immediate. Like, they go from, here's the joke of like, yes, Italian, but like, we're not doing that, to like, yeah, but everyone else who gives a shit is. So
it's also funny.
And again, Charles Martinet in that scene too, who's like, of course he's just gonna.
He plays Jump Man, or like, that's what they call him, because in the beginning he goes, I need, that's a great commercial, wahoo, as he's next to a Jump Man arcade machine.
Yeah.
And then he plays, because that dinner scene, the funniest part about that dinner scene is while everyone's doing a hammy Italian accent, they go, what do you think, Pop, about the commercial? And their dad, played by Mario's voice, just goes, I think it's stupid that you wasted all your money and pulled your brother in. Like, he just says this serious, like, really extra, like, it's like, why is he the only one that's not, like, eating the meatball or, like, doing the hand gesture?
Right. Yeah, it's just such a strange, so that they're kind of, I guess, excuse leading up to the movie was like, oh, yeah, we can't. We're not going to bring back, you know, the original voice. We're not going to have Mario be super Italian because, I don't know, either that's too silly and people wouldn't buy it, or it's too offensive and people would be bothered by it. And then you go ahead and do the most kind of like ham-fisted Italian family shit.
Yeah.
And like other video game movie like Sonic, which is doing its trilogy around the same time now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where like Ben Schwartz just like, he sounds like Sonic. And he's, you know, they at least got someone who sounds, but also, like, he cares. Granted, he's not the same level of star as Chris Pratt. But it's, you know, it was such an odd choice from Nintendo, who, again, is, like, very careful about stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's where I even wonder if it does go deeper of, like, it's a Universal thing or an Illumination thing. Like, did someone else say, like, okay, we're not going to do this because we need to separate this? Or is it a Nintendo thing where, like, we want to separate this? In case shit does hit the fan.
In case everybody hates it, we can say, oh, that's Chris Pratt Mario, not real Mario.
We just helped with the characters and oversaw, like, make sure they were respected on paper level. But, like,
in my head, the dramatization of how they sold it to Nintendo was basically the directors telling them what the plot was going to be, what references they were going to do in terms of, like, how much of the real world stuff they were going to do. And, like, I could see, you know, the heads of, you know, Nintendo kind of, like, you know, slumping in their chairs being like, we've been told this. Americans have told us they're going to do this, and it's not. And then, as soon as they bring up, we will have Chris Pratt, Jack Black, Charlie Day. Like, at that point, that's when they probably stood up and they're like, "We know those names. People know those names. Like, it's not going to be like, again, Bob Hoskins is a perfect fucking choice for '90s Mario, and Leguizamo is not even a bad choice for Luigi, honestly. Yeah. No. But like, those are not heavy hitters in the same way that fucking Pratt is at this point in time, especially." Jack Black is about, because that's a good thing too, is like, I would imagine their response to the casting list is similar to how everyone else's was, where it's like, Pratt, interesting. Jack Black, ooh, that could be fun. Charlie Day, oh, that's the easiest bucket I've ever fucking seen. Of course they're going to do that. Anya Taylor-Joy, I know the name. And like, it's one of those things where it's clear.
Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong?
Who is just like, clearly just doing his thing, but for like a kid's film, I could see kids just being like, oh, that's Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Just like, because Rogan is a good actor and is still like trying to like do his own Donkey Kong on top of his just it's like, it's fascinating just like how Illumination, you know, they're still chugging along popularity wise, and have like, it makes it sound like they're not doing well, but like, they've been making money Like, yeah. I mean, literally, out of these three films, only one of them has hit $1 billion in that fucking Mario movie.
Yeah.
And Illumination at this point is like, yep, we're going to do Zelda. Illumination's not doing it. Sony is, right?
Isn't I don't remember.
I think it's Sony. It's animated by, I can't remember who for the life of me now. It is live action.
Is it live action? I think
it's live action. It's,
But basically, with Illumination, it is like they did such a home run financially for the Mario Brothers that, like, at this point, they could do Despicable Me 7, and that could make no money, and they should be fine.
It's by West Ball.
West Ball, okay, because he did West King, Ball, he's and doing, it's live action. He's doing yep. Kingdom. I didn't know if it was live action, but.
Yep, that's right. Because I remember it was West Ball, it is live action.
It's just, like, it is fascinating. In terms of, like, you would think in terms of these performances that the Mario Brothers performance of Pratt would be like what you would expect from, like, his first animated feature.
Right. Because
for most actors that are live action or trained in live action as well as theater and not mainly in voice acting, that transition is never always like 100% perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And weirdly enough, with the Lego movie, like, Pratt's performance, especially only having, like, I think a total of 4 episodes of animated television under his belt. Like, I've seen the Lego movie nearly 10 times. I remember seeing it in theaters and my sister turning to me, like, in a crowded theater going, "You're laughing harder than the children this was made for."
Right.
I was like, this movie's fucking funny.
Yeah.
Like, I still think the best joke in the film is that you were canoodling with the foreign object. And then Emmett goes, "How dare you?" Like, yeah, just like, right. My favorite double joke entendre. Like,
my favorite joke is Lego Shack with the.
Y'all
ready for this? Oh no, they were ready for that. It's so smart, but it's another thing where, like, to go back on what you said about Mario making $1 billion.
Yeah,
like, that's another reason why, you know, break it down. Like, can theorize, like, why would Chris Pratt ever give a shit? When, like, it's Mario, it's always going to make $1 billion. There's no universe where the Super Mario Brothers movie by the Minion guys does not make $1 billion. In Japan, in America, overseas, like, you could replace almost everyone in the cast. And no matter what, it's still a Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it doesn't make as much a billion. Mm-hmm. But there's no universe where it doesn't make $1 billion, especially with Universal having... Universal Studios, Nintendo World.
Oh, yeah.
And all these other... It's Mario. It's the most well-known video game franchise of all time.
And what's...
Next to, like, fucking Tetris or Pong.
Yeah.
But, like, everyone knows Mario, so it was never going to make $1 billion... It was never not going to make $1 billion. So why would he ever have to try in this case? Where Garfield, it is, like, I think even more so if Garfield than Mario, a lot is put on his shoulders because Garfield isn't as popular with a lot of the kids because... The Cartoon Network show ended in, like, 2011.
Yeah.
That, you know, was introducing a lot of kids to Garfield again. Didn't have the live-action movies that were on in the early 2000s or the cartoons again in, like, the 80s and 90s. You know, no one's really reading the paper, like, physical media, the newspaper, funnies anymore. I mean, that was my introduction to Garfield. It was every Sunday I read the Sunday comics and he was there. So who do you bring in as your heavy hitter to reintroduce everyone to Garfield? It's Chris Pratt. And I think... that causes him to give more of a shit in his performance because there is more writing on it because Garfield is not as strong as an IP as Lego or Mario at the time, like right now when it's coming out.
Yeah.
And it translates and comes out. And it also comes out in the filmmaking too because unlike the Mario movie, Garfield actually has a fucking 3-act structure and a plot and actually gives a shit about being a real movie instead of Mario, which is like nonstop, every 2 minutes, ADHD, Rise of Skywalker-isms of like, "Hey, look, you know that thing that you like? Here it is. Let's move on to the next thing. You like this thing? Yeah, you do. Here's this flashy thing. You like it? Fuck you. Here's another flashy thing. Just you like that? Yeah, you do. Fuck you."
And just a string of references, yeah.
Yeah. And then it doesn't even reference one of the best things it could, which is the music.
Yeah,
which is abundance of confusing choices. But again, no matter what, no one has to care in that movie because there's no world where the animated Mario movie from Minion people doesn't make $1 billion coins.
Is to the benefit of like the little moments in the Mario movie where it's like they do have the references that are while they have the motifs that play here and little sound effects here and there are characters that show up in shots, there are I mean, the Toad, I think the Toadstool Village, like, when they finally get into Toadstool Kingdom and, like, you see, like the Toad Shop that has the music from, like, Mario Brothers 3, and you have little moments like yeah. the P-Wing, and, like, there are little dialogue things where it's like, I don't know if this is... It's like, there's one thing where I think it's like, does this flute even work? And it's like, yeah, well, it only takes you to one place. Like, it's like, yeah. things like that where it's like, clearly, they want to push further, and I would only hope for the better that, like, with the sequel, which they're going to do, because, like, mm-hmm. not only does the film end on a stinger of, like, let's get Yoshi into this, let's do other shit, like,
yeah,
yeah,
maybe they could even push, like, not even, like, a full Dawn of the Planet of the Apes situation, but, like, can we play a little bit more in the sandbox in a creative sense? Mm-hmm. And, because you're right, it's like, it is, even though there have been past video game films or big properties where it's like, this can't fail because it's big overseas. The one that comes to my head, even though it's not fully animated, but it is basically a hybrid, Warcraft, where it's like, this big fantasy epic that was basically like, most people have, understandably so, but like, that was like, we have Duncan Jones, big budget, it's got, you know, motion capture like Gollum in the Apes movies.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And it's like, we're going to get people involved, and you know what? Even if it doesn't do well in the States, which they probably weren't expecting, it'll do well overseas.
Yeah.
And it barely, I think barely with worldwide, made its money back.
It only made its money back because of worldwide.
Yeah, to the point where Austin, it's funny that he says you could just replace all the people in Mario 2 and then no one would care. The talks were that if they were going to do a Warcraft 2, it was going to be a more Asian-based, like Korean or Japanese cast, Korean cast, to be like, well, we got to get more of the worldwide involved here because like, no one's coming to see this film. Because again, like, because that first Warcraft film, it's like, even though Toby Kebbell is great in that movie for little moments he are, like, no one's going to be there to be like Paula Patton or Dominic Cooper, the guy from Vikings that his name escapes me, but like,
yeah,
like that was one of those things where it's like, you can see, looking back at other failures in a video game sense, of like, of course, if Anya Taylor-Joy says, yeah, I'll do this, just fucking give her the money. Just let let them do it. Like, hey, does Keegan-Michael Key want to put on a funny voice for Toad? That's cool. Like,
yeah,
that's fun. I mean, it is one of those things where it's like, that's why I think we appreciated the Garfield movie more, is because it's like, you could see that too with that cast, but they had more fun than they needed to have. They put a little bit more mustard on that dog.
Specifically,
than
Sam Jackson and Ving Rhames, who were just having like
Ving. A good time. Yeah.
Ving Rhames was a shock to me of him just like, I don't know, like crushing the role for what it needed to be. Of just like, I mean, he's just doing his Ving Rhames thing, but there's intent behind what he's doing.
Yeah,
you know. So
he's a phenomenal actor that's just been around for decades. And
yeah.
The fact that he just pops in the Garfield movie and basically is like, I'm the wise elder who is going to help you to, you know, become best friends and, you know, rekindle the father-son relationship you didn't have. And it's like, seen this shit before, but like, Rames is doing a good job and it's silly and it's fun. And Odie was the biggest surprise from the Garfield movie for me, because I just remember in the Bill Murray hybrid films where like,
he's just a dog.
He just kicks the real dog. Like, it's just the cat. Just get the fuck out of my way, Odie. Like, it's like, because he's a real dog, you can't have that basically brotherly love they kind of both have. Uh-huh. Like, in a way, the sibling love that, like, because, I mean, I think you laughed, Andy, and I think you laughed too, but like, when Garfield is sleepwalking, or like, he's half asleep, and Odie's like trying to get him to his midnight snack, and Garfield's mouth is just like, it's really well done and like, actually kind of cute. Austin's gonna go check on our fourth guest, sweet Agnes. Just letting on. No, you're good. You're good. Have you been hearing some dog barks? It's just Agnes wants to be a part of the podcast, but we don't have a fourth lavalier mic, huh? No, I'm not cutting any of this.
Not cutting any of this. Honestly, like, speaking of real dogs and, you know, hearing one of my two dogs starting to howl and whine is very
on
brand.
She loves Chris Pratt's performance in the Super Mario Brothers movie specifically.
She does.
She likes but the like, part when he becomes a Tanuki.
But like, what you said with Odie in it, like, Odie was the secretary of, like, it was bullying ish, but it was It was degradation, some degradation at most. It doesn't lean into the whole like Garfield hates Odie, wants Odie to like fucking die.
No, when I thought of Odie in the comic, and again, this could have just been my interpretation and not how it is, but it always felt like Odie was, one, a nuisance every time he showed up in the comic strip, and two, was always played off as dumber than a box of rocks.
Well, the OG cartoons are also like played up that Odie is like, Garfield's actively trying to get rid of Odie. If I remember,
or maybe not quite on Tom and Jerry levels, but an old cartoon.
There's some plot line at some point in the Garfield canon universe. I'm sure if I hit up Ryan Shank, Garfield connoisseur, that he would like be able to answer this. But like, there was like a storyline at some point where I think it's the movies where Liz is Odie's owner, and like she moves in with John, and that's when Odie is introduced, and Garfield's trying to get rid of Odie the whole time. I think it's the first live-action movie.
I think that is the first live-action movie.
He's trying to get rid of Odie because he's jealous.
Yeah.
And like that had some animosity. Like it wasn't trying to like murder like Tom and Jerry Odie, right. But you know, the new one was kind of lacking that. Like you said, it could have been a Heathcliff film.
I think I was surprised by the amount of effort, and that sounds so cynical to say out loud. But
no, I think we all were.
The amount of kids' films we have seen as kids, while going as teenagers, becoming adults, and now just adults. The amount of different versions of kids' films we have seen that are basically like, I would admit if the Illumination Super Mario Brothers movie came out when I was 5 or 6, I would have just gone rip shit. I would have gone bananas.
It did. It was called Space Jam.
I mean, that's the thing too. It's like, we talked about that when we talked about Space Jam. It's like that's why with like my Letterboxd review, it's like, listen, I can't really threat the hustle. They did what other studios have done for decades, and it actually worked off in their way.
Yeah.
Now if the next Mario film is a new legacy, then they deserve any kind of shit they get from this point forward.
And it is
interesting to see that like we're still, in a tiresome sense, but also a bit fascinating, is just like how we can have a Lego movie and a Super Mario Brothers movie and a Garfield movie, just those varying degrees of quality still today. It's like it doesn't feel like any of the films are dead today. Like even the Lego film kind of, but like I think it's a lot of that has to do with just Warner Animation Group in general. They're not really doing anything anymore. They canned.
There was supposed to be a third Lego movie at some point to follow up with Emmett's storyline still. But there's supposed to be I'm probably wrong. I could look it up, but it was like Lego Life or something like that, where it was written by and starring Jason Segel, also directed by Chris McKay, who did Lego Batman and did Lego Part 2.
And did his best film, The Tomorrow War.
Yes. And Renfield.
He was Renfield too.
Yeah, and he was one of the lead animators in Robot Chicken, which is why they brought him in on the first Lego movie, so he could be an animation supervisor and help with like getting the stop motion look. Since they weren't doing real stop motion, because it would have taken them far longer than generated, but they were supposed to do one with Jason Segel, written by Jason Segel, starring him, and they shit canned it like after I think 5 years of like pre-production. I don't know if it ever got into actual like, you know, production or animation, but they, I think it was because the Ninjago movie underperformed so badly that they put a lot of things on hold. They had the Lego movie, the second part, already like in the works. That came out, it did pretty well, did well enough that, you know, wasn't considered a flop, but they just shit canned everything else, even though everyone wants a Lego Batman movie too, because that is arguably the sleeper hit of all the Lego movies.
Because again, that's also the something we could spend a whole fucking podcast episode talking about, is the fact that like with all three of these different companies, their execution and their mentality surrounding the property is fascinating, because with Warner Brothers, it is, if anything is holding back the Lego property in some way, shape, or form, it's Warner Brothers. In terms of like, because I remember the big thing about the Lego Batman movie being great, because it basically was like 3 years of people going, okay, Lego Movie 2 is being announced. What is it going to be about? Another year goes by. What is Lego Movie Part 2 going to be about? And then another year goes by. Oh, guess what? Now it's called Lego Movie 2, the second part. That's great. what the fuck is this movie about? And then it's like, also, we got the Lego Batman movie. And it's like, the Lego Batman movie is great, but I still remember seeing Lego Batman movie going, this movie was a nice surprise, I had a great time. When the fuck are we going to get Lego Movie Part 2? And then it's like, don't worry, guys, if you loved the Lego Batman, tune in September when we had the Lego Ninjago. And I just was like, God damn it, guys.
Well, the issue of Lego Ninjago was that
it's taking so long.
So Lego Ninjago, well, before I get into that real quick, it was called the Billion Brick Race is what it was.
Okay.
It was canceled in 2019. It says potentially due to production problems. But it was Jason Segel and Drew Pearce, and they were going to co-direct it and co-write it and star in it. If I remember right, it was supposed to be something of like almost like a rat race, like Lego movie thing. But the Ninjago movie, the thing about that, the reason that they made it to begin with was because it was Lego, and still is, Lego's only successful
original.
It's only original successful original IP outside of like Bionicle. And Bionicle's not considered Lego system Lego. It's considered Bionicle system Lego.
Yeah.
Because there's Bionicle system, Technic system, and Lego system.
Yeah.
Lego system is the traditional interlocking the bricks with the minifigures. Technic is more like, you know, Mindstorms, like these little like robots and
It's mechanical and rods and gears and axles.
And then Bionicle were the, you know, as you guys already talked about on episode last year.
Which Bionicle started as Technic.
Yeah, but Bionicle started as part of Technic, and they branch off their own thing.
They spent so much money on All American Rejects.
Yeah, and Lego's tried like City's always been the core of the Lego system. And they always have like space, and but space is technically connected to the city, or they'll bring space back and stuff. They've tried different stuff with space, of like Lego Mars Attack, Lego Mars Mission, Lego Space Police, Lego Blacktron, Megatron, Bricktron, Redtron, all these different ones. But Ninjago was the first one to just like something clicked there, and they got the animated, like really bad animation, but like really cute, wholesome, like Cartoon Network TV show that my youngest brother was obsessed with.
My brother was too.
Yeah,
He had Ninjago toys, and that was when I realized the Lego divide was actually there for a different generation.
Right?
Because it's like, you talk to people who were watching that show who grew up with that show, and they're like, dude, there's like 7 seasons of that fucking show.
One of my brothers sent me a TikTok like so a few months ago of like one of the twists from the show. It was like when Zane found out he was a robot, and it was heartbreaking. Yes. I was like, you were fucking 5. What are you, like, that's insane.
Like,
but,
it was fucking wild.
It's their most successful original IP, and even to this day, it's still going.
Which makes me think that like the green Ninjago figure showing up in Lego Movie was supposed to be a Wojak moment for all the children.
It was because
when he pops up, I was in my brain like oh, he speaks, and the ninja doesn't speak. It's funny to think that in the Lego movie
they just call him Green Ninja.
Like if you showed it all, the like just a collage of all the references or the Lego pieces that talk, I don't think anyone would have expected Abraham Lincoln would fucking speak,
right?
By Will Forte, who plays Abe Lincoln's clone in fucking Clone High. It's like, Jesus Christ.
And
like,
you get William Shakespeare, who's Yorma Tacone.
Yorma Tacone, who's, I mean, because the fucking Lonely Island song that is the cover.
Everything
of
is awesome.
Tegan and Sarah. So much fun. Like,
but go back to the reason Ninjago ever gets made is because it's so successful already as a Cartoon Network show, so successful as an IP on its own. But I think one of the biggest issues is that, like, theatrically to, like, wide audiences, it doesn't really play because it's also an original story. It's not connected to any of the canon or lore of the TV show.
No, it isn't.
So a lot of the fans didn't really care. But and their lead was Dave Franco, who, no offense to him, is not a leading man necessarily. It was Dave Franco, Justin Theroux,
Camille Nanjiani,
Abby
Jacobson. So you have, like, strong comedic talent.
But you have a lot of, like, B-list people who are talents.
Yeah.
Like,
up and coming.
Great because you got Broad City. You got Camille, who, you know, at that point had just done The Big Sick, I think.
To do that. And Zach, not Zach Robinson, but he was in Silicon Valley.
The Office.
Yes, The Office. Is it Gabe?
Gabe in The Office.
He's in Ninjago.
Then you got Dave Franco coming off of the Jump Street movies.
Who's very funny.
The success, which he's great in. And then Justin Theroux, who, if anything, is from, at the time, what was he on, The Americans? Is that right?
No, that's not him.
No, he wasn't on The Americans. He was on There was another show that he was on.
I don't know.
He's on
the
Leftovers.
Remember. Leftovers. That's what it was. He was on Leftovers. It's like, you're not bringing Leftovers to see fucking Lego Ninjago.
You're right.
But he does, I will say, of the little I've seen of the Ninjago movie.
He does great as Garmadon.
Justin Theroux as the lead. Like, I still think of the line of you were a terrible parent. And he's like, how could I have been a terrible father? I was never in your life. It's so like he says it so straight too. And yeah, I just remember when that film was getting just a lot of press, and I'm just like, maybe I'll, like, again, with Lego Batman being so good, I was like, maybe Ninjago will be like that. And then immediately the reviews are like, this is not a Batman situation. This is straight up Lego Ninjago, and there's nothing here that is going to be against what you think that is. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So when it gets to, like, Lego Movie 2, the second part at that point, it's just like people, the hype had died to the point where Warner Animation Group is like, well, I guess we make Smallfoot. Like, what fuck else do they do, like, after that, really? Where it's like, because they do Storks intermingled with all this, which is like a cute movie. That movie's cute.
Forgot
like,
about Storks.
Yeah, but like, again, it's like a September release intermixed with all the Lego releases. Right. Because at a certain point, it almost was like, we're going to use Warner Animation Group to only make Lego films.
Yeah.
And then when Ninjago doesn't work, they go, Warner Animation Group is no longer making Lego films.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like if they come back with like the Lego Movie 3 is a film I think genuinely could be better with age, especially if we keep to the story of the narrative of the original kid. Yeah. Especially with 10 years past.
Yeah.
If we wait long enough, we could have that kid in his 20s, and then there's just a fucking treasure chest of just options you could do with that. If they want to. Again, it's up to Warner Brothers, and at least I think of these three companies, again, the fact that it's like the first film in their trilogy is Warner Brothers, second's Illumination, third's fucking Sony.
Yeah.
And the one where it's like the Sony one, surprisingly, was not the biggest train wreck in terms of just like the dumpster fire as it could have been.
But Sony's also like, they're, Sony, hey, take it outside.
She's just really excited take it outside. We're talking about Sony now.
Take it out there. Take it out there.
Her web connects us all,
thank
Agnes.
You. Hey. Sorry, guys.
You're good.
Knuckleheads.
I don't know. Andy, you've been a little silent out there. I think we've been taking over too much. What's peeking in your brain right now in terms of?
I'm just marveling at the recall on cast members of the Lego Ninjago movie.
I'm telling you right again. We
like Justin Theroux was always the biggest surprise to me.
I'm telling you, yeah. Right now, Andy, we've had conversations on the podcast where I go, my brain is a cavalcade of just like, there is a random dusty folder in a filing cabinet that pull out, and then Austin,
especially with
Austin
voices,
is literally the equivalent of that. So like when you bring
you
up
guys
Lego,
open a can of worms. Well, I remember like. Two, the Lego movie was the first also like just come a fucking Lego episode. But like Lego was the first time that the blind bag Lego minifigures were something that wasn't just original figures too. It was the first time it was an actual like IP technically. This time God damn it. Sorry.
You're good.
So the Lego movie was the first time that the Lego minifigures collectible blind bags were actual IP instead of just being original brand new minifigures that you'd never seen in the Lego system before. They were seen in your city. And then that started to continue with like the Lego Batman movie to Lego Ninjago to then Simpsons to the Lego movie part two to Disney to Marvel to DC and like expand. So like there's a ripple effect there too of like all these different things. And part of that ripple effect, I think, is still like the IP animation because you get the Peanuts movie. A few years later as well.
Yeah.
Then you have the Garfield movie now as well. You have, you know, Spider-Verse doesn't really like go there because Spider-Man's always had some sort of animated counterpart, but you could throw it in there too of like IP being turned into, you know, animated feature film. And that even has the other connection of Phil Lord, Chris Miller.
Yeah.
Who also did It's a Cloud of Chance Meatballs before the Lego movie. And that was a massive success.
Right.
So was the sequel. So they're kind of guaranteed hits there. So they're guaranteed hits to turn your IP to an animated theatrical
film. That's true.
While Chris Pratt is considered to be your financial guarantee that your IP turned animated film is going to be a box office success.
Right.
Because it happened with Lego Movie. It happened with Mario. I haven't seen what the box office results were for Garfield this weekend. I know this weekend in general suffered Memorial Day.
It's 100 million worldwide.
100 million worldwide, which Garfield's, I think is so far a success.
Pretty
definitely
good.
More than, like, you know, obviously Furiosa, which is an R-rated action
film.
But still, like, it's guaranteed successes there. So you have two different sides of the guaranteed success coin stemming from the Lego movie. But really kind of started, you can go back to Clive of Chance of Meatballs.
Yeah.
Of here's this beloved children's book. Phil Lord, Chris Miller turned into a successful you know, feature film through Blue Sky, which was distributed by Sony at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lego Movie, now through Warner Brothers, and then back to Sony for Spider-Man. But then now you can go to Chris Prattwell, you know, to test that Universal, and Chris Pratt works there for Mario. Chris Pratt also works with Sony now because he bring him in for Garfield. So it's all these different, like, things. And then you also got the Addams Family, which is, like, what I was telling you guys about. This, there was, like, another ripple effect with this, the Garfield movie, and Chris Pratt is, like, yeah, the Chris Pratt trilogy of Lego Movie, Garfield, and Super Mario. But then the Garfield can also connect to the Garfield movie trilogy of, like, the two of Bill Murray and this one. Then you got Garfield connecting to the Sunday Funnies turned into CGI animated films from, specifically from Blue Sky. No. Because Adam's Family is from Illumination, right?
No, Adam's Family is, I think...
Is it Blue Sky?
No, it's not Blue Sky either. I think Blue Sky was defunct by that point.
So
I think
it's Sony, like, though.
I think it might be Sony.
So, okay, so
Sony,
I guess, connected to Sony. I'll have possibly to look it up. But no matter what, it's a CG animated... Comic strip film. Because Adam's Family started as New Yorker. And then New Yorker Sunday comic. Then you have The Peanuts, which was Sunday comic. Garfield was Sunday comic. It's like this weird ripple effect of, like, all these different... weird senses of IP and the one key thing that you can use to elevate your IP or elevate this, and then the ripple effects that come to it across the film industry and how it manifests the creation of all these other things.
Yeah, it's a weird thing of, like, when it comes to... Is there anything you want to say about Pratt before we get into another rabbit hole, Andy?
We're long past.
I knew this
would happen, and I'm not complaining.
No, I'm not complaining.
That's really just the connecting thread of this all, which is also, I think, more interest. Like, the most interesting part of this is, like, what you said, Andy, at the beginning, that this is not what anyone, I think, would ever consider to be a trilogy, which is what, you know, makes it an odd trilogy.
Yeah.
But the ripple effect that comes from Chris Pratt being involved in the Lego movie is crazy.
I mean,
like, it has a massive impact. Like, people want to talk about, you know, like, obviously, like, we all joke around and bitch and moan about, like, oh, Chris Pratt, you know, is casting this, but, like, he does have a legitimate effect on, you know, movies in the film industry right now that can be traced back to just this one casting choice in June of 2012 when they cast, you know, Andy Dwyer, the golden retriever boy from Parks and Recreation, to be the yellow-faced little Lego block guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the Lego movie.
Yeah, it's Chris Pratt's presence in these movies speaks to a larger kind of the mechanics of the studio space, especially in
animated
movies.
There's a real world
where
Nintendo doesn't trust another studio to adapt any other IP. There's a real world where we don't get the live action Legend of Zelda experiment if Chris Pratt never stars in the Lego movie.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't even think it's gonna even happen. Like, it's like, there's a part of me where it's like, I want something like the Zelda film to but it is like, the Lego movie is such, it's a weird thing of, like, showing a precursor for what studios are kind of looking at in terms of star-studded ensembles for animated films. But then at the same time, it's like, it is not a set in stone. If you do this formula, it's 100%. Even though all three of these films, even with Garfield, I know Garfield is still out at the moment, but I will say all three of these films are probably going to be successful financially. Like, it is, like, it's still, at the same time, there are animated films that will come out. I mean, again, like, it is less than a year ago, we had DreamWorks come out with Teenage Kraken. Which is technically based off of a young adult novel. Like, it was, you know, pushed as, like, you know, a lower budget for them, and just, like, see if people really enjoyed it. And I think it made less than 20 million. So it's like, it is, and that's DreamWorks.
Right.
That was the studio that was built to be like, you know what? Fuck you, Disney. We can do Disney without Disney. Mm-hmm. And then now we're in this weird spot where it's like, that is also owned by that's owned by Comcast as well. DreamWorks.
DreamWorks is owned by Universal. It's owned by Comcast.
It leads to this weird thing where it's like if you have Peacock, everyone's favorite streaming service, where you just see fucking like Ruby Gilman with this, and then fucking Mario is on that as well, where it's like this weird world of like all this mix in. It's like animation in so many different ways, even with the phenomenal films, is such a minefield, I think, in production wise.
Yeah.
But it's like just to have these three films and just to have the correlation of, oh, by the way, Chris Pratt's the lead, and it doesn't tank any of these films. And it has, again, it's not because Pratt's a bad actor. He is a good actor. I think it's the craziest thing about his career, especially at this point, is that in terms of his live action stuff, I'd even say animation, but like we haven't seen him get weird.
Yeah, he hasn't really done anything outside of the...
Yeah,
like I think his big thing that he was pushing hard was, I think last year or 2 years ago, he did an Amazon series that he produced called The Kill List or something like that.
Yeah.
He really pushed that. That was kind of like his resurgence with Amazon, trying to be his resurgence with Amazon after the Tomorrow War wasn't what they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And so like he did that, and I think even that wasn't enough, because I think... Yeah. Weirdly enough, in between Lego Movie and Super Mario Brothers Movie, Pratt's, at least on the internet, Pratt's persona and popularity almost soured in certain aspects because of just...
Definitely.
Entirely because of insinuation, never because of anything he said, because in all honesty, anything he's ever said publicly has usually been cryptic or very vague.
Yeah.
And I think that leads to the...
He's very bureaucratic in anything he actually says.
It's a very very he has a very sanitized
some stuff of like, you know,
yeah,
like the divorce from Anna Faris, that like, you know, that's all getting like gossip, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
On paper, like just as an actor, I think really people's biggest issue is like what we said. We haven't seen him get weird.
No.
You know, we haven't seen him get weird. We haven't seen him try anything other than like what works for him.
I just remember like what I first saw, kind of like the persona. The Pratt persona in the public, at least on this internet, changed when Gunn was initially fired from Marvel. When he wasn't able to do Guardians 3 initially. And I remember like all the Guardians cast like rallied up against him like publicly and like were for him publicly. And then Pratt just says like, God will take us on the right path. Something like that.
Right,
and I think a lot of people went...
Excuse me?
David Chase is literally like, sue me all you fucking want, Disney. I'm not doing your stupid fucking movie. Yeah. Fuck you.
Unless blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Karen Gillan's like, this is a horrible mistake. Blah, blah. Chris Pratt's like, Inshallah. No, not Inshallah.
No, not Inshallah.
God willing, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you know, may Star-Lord grace your screen again.
And it's like, one of those weird things where it's just like, you think, would he have done that if Lord Miller went through a similar thing? Because again, like his career wouldn't have been... Because again, without Gunn, I think Guardians solidifies.
Would he have done that if he was playing Han Solo in Solo, a Star Wars story?
I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things where it's just like, I think when it became known that out of all of the big Chris's, Pratt seemed the quietest, people just latched onto that and thought, like, oh, there's got to be something that's hiding there. And to be honest, there's not really much there to latch onto other than just like poor. A lot of poor wording, I will say. There are some things where it's just like post-wise.
It's just very easy to just assume that silence means like what you are, like against the thing that I am for. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of Chris Pratt's perception has come down to. The biggest thing has probably been like just the fact that he attends Hillsong Church, which is riddled in scandal.
Yeah.
So we don't have to dive into whatsoever, but like that's probably the most concrete like, evidence, if you want to call it that, of like anything that could be towards like
problematic
ill behavior, like problematic behavior with him and stuff, because of, you know, the things that are involved with Hillsong and that can of worms. But anything beyond that has just been like what we've said. It's very bureaucratic, it's very like vague, it's very just like not doing anything. And I think it's really just comes down to he just probably isn't interested in any of that, and it's not, doesn't do any harm or any good. It's just kind of there. It's really very similar to like his actual performances itself. There's nothing that's doing any necessary, like it's not doing really any harm or detriment to anything he's ever been. But it's also like nothing he's in is ever truly benefiting from it, really past the Lego Movie. because you look at Jurassic World, he just has become like, you know, Joe Schmo, generic, like, buff dude. Like,
which again,
he started the trend of like, you know, schlubby guy who becomes super ripped and gets to do a bunch of steroids on Disney's dime. But like, Guardians is his most interesting performance in that space.
I think post Lego Movie, I think James Gunn is, it seems to be the only person who can get an interesting performance out of Chris Pratt.
Because I think a lot of it also has to do, because I think a lot of what makes it also interesting with the latter two films in this trilogy is the fact that when Lego Movie comes out, I don't think Pratt is anywhere embarrassed about his persona as where he came from.
Well,
but when it comes, but when it comes to like the Tomorrow War and like that kill, like right before Mario Brothers comes out, it feels like a lot of the silliness he used to bring to interviews is kind of gone until he does Guardians 3.
Well,
and then like the press is like, it's almost like, oh, where's this guy been?
Yeah.
Like a lot of it.
Lego Movie comes out in 2014. Guardians comes out in 2014. Guardians is what propels him into superstardom because again, he started the trend of like, he got into such incredible shape. And like it shocked everyone that Andy Dwyer is like has a six pack and is a superhero now. Like, this is insane. This is unheard of. We've never seen this before. So like, and who is kind of the cause of it? It's James Gunn, who was like, fuck it, I'll cast you if you like lose the weight or whatever. Like, but your acting was incredible. Like, sure, let's do this.
But
like,
that's a crazy thing too, is that even Gunn said if Pratt couldn't get off the weight, he would have rewritten the character for him.
Yeah.
I think it's
definitely speaking out of my ass here, but I think it's fun to theorize that like maybe like he correlates James Gunn with a lot of his success in his career because Gunn was directly involved in the project that really propelled him into this, into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
It's like the star. Yeah. So like whenever he comes back to this role, he's going to deliver it to the one guy that he owes it to. Because I think Pratt is kind of similar to like, John Cena talks about James Gunn and even like Vince McMahon and other people like very similarly of like, these are people who got this out of me and I owe my life to them.
Yeah.
Like Cena speaks that way about Gunn specifically, which makes Gunn, I think, a way more interesting director to like kind of study now, like hearing this from, seeing it from like three actors, because Batista talks about it too, of like the way that Gunn just transforms these people, like directs them, it just does something in their psyche, like with these three men specifically.
Yeah, that he's able to get kind of never before seen performances out of not necessarily non-actors, but people not known in that particular realm of acting. Yeah,
and I feel like Pratt, there's just got to be something that he connects, like he's just got to do it for James, you know, which is an actor-director relationship. For sure.
Well, and also Gunn and Pratt both probably feel a very personal, I know they do, feel a very personal kinship with the character of Star-Lord.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas
yes.
any other characters Pratt has played besides maybe Andy Dwyer, he probably wouldn't have that emotional connection to the character.
No, because it's very clear that his Star-Lord connection is that, and a base on like a surface level, you would think, oh, there's an Andy Dwyer man-child nature to Star-Lord.
Yeah.
And then it's when Gunn gives him that pathos of just, like, the trauma. And being an Earthling that hasn't been on Earth for 30 years.
Right.
And then it's clear that, like, I think a lot of what makes the Lego Movie work, too, is the fact that Lord and Miller, as directors, have shown in their careers, like, especially with Cloudy, the fact that Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs has in the lead role before he got big, really, on SNL, super huge, is Hader. Mm-hmm. And so you have Bill Hader as the lead in both those films, and then you go to Lego Movie, and you can see again Lord Miller being like, Pratt's got something. Like we can work with him, and I think it's a way where it's like he's the guy that'll really be the genuine. Even though Legos don't need fucking glue, he is the glue that'll bring this all together when we have silly shit going on. And cut to
the Craggle
movie where it's like, I think at that point the directors are like, we just need to have someone who can keep the foundation strong. If for some reason something goes afloat, and then I think with a Garfield movie, it's probably very similar to that as well, where it's just like, we need a big star. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have someone be big for his dad, which is probably what makes the most sense too for the Garfield movie. It's like,
yeah,
you have Pratt, and then you have, well, let's have someone be his dad, and then it's funny to have, you know, Samuel Jackson be Chris Pratt's dad, in a movie, and then have like a genuinely decent chemistry as a strange father and son, and have a fun time with that, and have you know, good moments with Pratt as Garfield where it's like, you could argue that there are moments in Garfield, in the Garfield movie, where it's like, oh, this is not how Garfield would act in the comic strip.
Yeah.
Which is silly to say out loud, but it's like, I mean, it is what it is. Like, in that
it's
regard,
a distinguished but... set of character traits. Yeah.
But like
yeah.
in a cinematic sense, when it comes to like the emotional pull, it is, I think Pratt does a good job vocally of being able to play a character who constantly doesn't want to be in a movie.
And
I think
he
does
gotta,
a decent job.
Going off of
like,
that, I got to wonder, like, at some point, do people just start casting him in roles like this for the bit? Because, I mean, he was Mr. Pringle in the Super Bowl commercial. And you can't tell me that that wasn't done as, like, a, hey, hey, Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt's in
everything.
Everything. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, so at some point, does someone cast him just for the bit, and not even the star power anymore, of, like, knowing that the controversy will create interest and that that will end up creating
okay.
like, dollars to some degree?
Here's the question.
Why did we go see Garfield this last week?
Right.
Because Chris Pratt's Garfield. Like, haha, this is going to be a bad, ironic time.
Yeah.
And we were luckily, like, thankfully, like, pretty surprised and, like, enjoyed ourselves. Mm-hmm. But, like...
I was shocked every time I genuinely laughed.
I know. I was, like, chuckling throughout the whole thing.
But what,
like,
what do you got,
it's
Andy?
Cute.
Well, this raises the question. What... is your nightmare Chris Pratt casting? Iconic character, IP, animated film adaptation. Chris Pratt gets cast. Who's sending a tingle of dread down your spine?
Link. It wouldn't be that since it's live action.
He just winds up playing every Nintendo character.
Excuse me.
Oh my god. Those bits of dialogue are so Pratt-coded.
In my head, that question means nightmare scenario is something that should genuinely would never happen in reality. But in this case, easy. Chris Pratt is Mickey.
Ooh.
Getting Chris Pratt to play two of the most iconic, just media like properties.
Yeah.
Where like in the fucking 90s, they were head to head as to who's more popular with kids, Mario or Mickey Mouse.
Right.
If Pratt gets
both,
I would think I was having a stroke if I saw that.
Yeah.
Because it's just like that. Because again, if we think Nintendo is stingy with their property, Mickey, I would even say, is even worse with Disney's relationship with. And to say even like the Mario has very little qualities of character, Mickey has about the same amount.
Sure.
Maybe less.
Yeah.
Again, Mickey's had more speaking roles and speaking shows, and they even have Mickey who's been consistent on that little TV show. But like, that would be in a cinematic sense. If I saw that same black and white Pratt picture next to Mickey Mouse, I would be like, "Oh my god!
Oh my god!"
I think simply by virtue of the fact that Mickey is a blanker slate.
Yeah, yeah.
I would be more bothered. Similar vein. By Chris Pratt, Bugs Bunny.
That was my second choice. I was also thinking, even though it's not animated,
what's up,
Kermit,
Doc?
I was thinking Kermit too.
Yeah, Kermit.
Any iconic.
Excuse you, it's duck season.
guys, he's right behind me, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is it just me or does he have a lisp?
It's called Rascally
Rabbit.
I am curious as to, like, from this point, because I honestly think with the Garfield movie, and I'm going to knock on wood when I say this, because it could also always change, but, like, I feel like by the time this movie has come out, the Chris Pratt could be anything meme has pretty much been dead at a certain point. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not as strong as it was.
Well, I mean,
like,
the
2021.
Well, it's not going to be as strong as that, because Mario and Garfield, those casting announcements came out pretty close together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was very much like everybody kind of freaking out that, like, why is he every iconic character
the best,
now?
But, like, the best version of that I've seen was not even Chris Pratt, but it was someone being like, you know, Apple was in talks of doing a Beatles biopic film. I sent you this picture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, y'all, here, I got the best actor for the Beatles, and it was just Tig Notaro for all four Beatles.
Oh, my God.
Like, you know, her as the Beatles. It's like, that was when I was like, are we finally going to evolve from Chris Pratt as everyone and just find funnier casting that's bad?
Almost or like there's the Ryan Gosling as historical black figures.
Yes. There's that. I bet Gosling really loves that.
Ryan Gosling as Martin Luther King Jr.
Anyway.
I'm gonna go the opposite of your question and do a casting I would
a dream
be
casting
fine with.
Dreamcasting,
but casting I would be okay with if they announced it for an IP. Because I know this IP is never ever going to get adapted anyways.
Okay.
My favorite comic strip of all time is Calvin and Hobbes. I love Calvin and Hobbes. I think Chris Pratt would actually do an all right job as Hobbes.
Yeah, he'd be good Hobbes.
I think he would actually be a good Hobbes.
Yeah.
Would
Chris Pratt do a supporting role?
That's a big thing.
That is a great question. Like, would he do a supporting role?
I couldn't tell you Pratt's last supporting role.
I think if you actually, because he's not really a fucking kid anymore, but like if a few years ago, if you announced Jacob Tremblay.
God, I knew you were going to fucking say Jacob Tremblay.
Chris Pratt. I mean, like, but that's the thing about like fan castings that are so like, of course, this is your first.
Yeah.
Like in my brain, like when you brought up fucking Max for the Lego magazine, my joke was like, oh, Timothée Chalamet.
Oh my God.
Like it's like things like that where it's like, but in my brain, it's like,
Lego, we can build it to anything.
If we're going to have like that Super Mario Brothers Garfield-esque mentality of like who is an easy sell just by the fact that he has great films under their belt that can like be like, well, this guy's got a decent track record.
Yeah.
Like Tremblay and Pratt. Oh, that screams.
Yeah, show me a picture of Max.
Oh, that actually screams Tremblay really well. That would actually be funny.
Is this Max the Lego mascot?
Thought would be the main character.
Okay, the Lego Club mascot.
But very 90s, that is very Tremblay coded.
I think. I thought. I mean, how about young Mufasa? Could you imagine?
Oh my God.
I'm still.
Who else could?
Oh my God! What if he's Stitch in the Lilo and Stitch live action?
Who's Galifianakis going to be? Because I know he was announced.
I don't know.
He could be Pleakley. I guess that makes sense.
Galifianakis would be a good Pleakley.
It wouldn't be bad Pleakley. It would be who would be Jumba. Pratt as Stitch would just be. But then again, you have your same question. But it's like, would you have Pratt just not be on set at all? Like it's just voice. Would be Bradley Cooper it? And be okay with that.
Yeah. Hey, Ohana means family or something like that, I think.
Well,
I thought it meant pineapple on pizza.
I got four arms, four guns.
I got four arms, I got elbows. Oh, and I have four actual arms.
And no, we're not going to do the original ending of Lilo and Stitch in this one. Keep it.
Good God.
The 2002, the edited version.
I'm trying to think what would be like an actual casting that I would just hate with Pratt.
I'm just trying
like IP. Are we specific? Like, I want to keep it related to like animated IP.
Yeah.
What we've been talking about. Like, I'm just trying to think. Like, Link was a fucking good one. So was Mickey. And man.
Because again,
like racking my brain.
This is not a nightmare. Sorry to derail you again, but
this is
not a nightmare, but a predictable video game animated film adaptation would be Ratchet.
Yes.
Like Chris Pratt is Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank.
And of course, that was the one fucking time that someone actually got it.
Because they used the real actor. It was James Arnold.
They did,
And it's funny that you say that. But honestly, in a studio sense,
Yeah, that would be good.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah. He wouldn't be a poor fit for the role.
No,
Okay, it's kind of nightmare, but also like I would be more open to it. Crash Bandicoot.
See, I was thinking, like, genuinely, I was thinking.
I would be like, that would both be horrible because Crash needs to be silent, like type guy, but also.
Would he have too many lines?
Yeah.
That would.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Pratt would do the wow.
Yeah.
But
that shit.
Would he also have too much
time? You said that I literally, if we're going to keep like pairings that, because again, it's funny too, that like the Super Mario Brothers movie, it's like, it's not the first time Charlie Day and Chris Pratt have played close, you know, ensemble pictures together because Benny and Emmett, and then also in like other sense having the fact that in the Garfield movie you have fucking Nick Fury and Star-Lord as father and son, and just like, but I was thinking like in a video game sense, if Naughty Dog weren't a bunch of cowards and they wanted to bring Jack and Daxter back, Pratt as Jack and Charlie Day as Daxter is not the worst thing in the world. Not the like, but then again, it's the question of, will Jack have too many lines? Because the whole joke is Jack doesn't talk too much.
Yeah.
Until the second one when he becomes hardened and quote-unquote badass.
Yeah. Him being Spyro would be bad. Spyro's supposed to be like angsty teen.
It depends on the version too, because like
it's... Elijah Wood, though, was the most notable person to voice Spyro, in 2009?
Yeah,
it was like Legend of the Dragon or something like that, Year of the Dragon.
Oh, I didn't know that was Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
It was right before they Skylanders.
Okay.
It was the last Spyro games for, I think, they were on the PS2 slash PS3. It was before they Skylandered him.
Skylandered him.
I'm going to pull up my bingo
Get
card.
Get Skylanders.
Killed him.
Sorry.
Yeah.
On my Odd Trilogy's bingo card, I have references Skylanders on a podcast randomly. I didn't think we'd ever get to it, but I'm glad I can just... Just square that out, and I did it.
We could reference Lego Dimensions, which is diving even deeper back into video games with Chris Pratt voicing Emmett in the Lego Movie, the video game.
Yeah.
For the adaptation there, that also connected to Lego Dimensions Toys to Life, which is more IP schlock of them, like trying to connect a million things, like Disney tried to do with Disney Infinity. You had Skylanders, you had Lego Dimensions, you had all these different ways of doing like Toys to Life. And connect multiple IPs together.
I want to clarify too, for the because we haven't even
the canine commentary is off the charts.
Probably it wasn't that. It was Agnes and our fifth guest Alvin. We're just fighting over who would be the best Nightmare Pratt choice.
But yeah.
I just know I wanted to bring up because we're now 100 minutes in. But I wanted the setup for the podcast has Andy in the most comfy chair in the room.
Yeah.
And Andy has been slowly slumping into that sinking chair a little more. Because it's so comfy over there, but it's also like we've derailed it so many times. I can see your brain.
We're getting more and more casual. Austin's up and walking around the room.
Well, I'm looking at like, I'm trying to look at my different like IP things, like my video games. Oh, my dogs are barking.
This is the most unprofessional podcast we've done yet.
We're having a great time.
But I was trying to look at like the different IP of the Lego sets I have set out. Like,
yeah,
Chris Pratt as Lego Jerry Seinfeld.
We're still going.
Hey, what's the deal with Lego bricks, guys?
Oh man, this is what I remember the Monkey Bone
wasn't
episode being.
Yes.
That's what I remember, but without the dogs is really what I remember it being.
Well, we're missing some 9/11 jokes.
We were missing some 9/11 jokes, and we did talk a lot about, I think, industry stuff that I think had nothing to do with animation.
Probably not at all.
Henry.
But.
This is barely on topic. Wasn't at some point...
As if that makes any difference at this point.
Wasn't Chris Pratt, like, loosely rumored to be, like... the lead in an Indiana Jones reboot.
He was
going to
be five. That was
He was going to be five. Disney wanted him to be Indy so badly. And that's one of the reasons Harrison Ford was like,
Harrison Ford was like,
playing
fuck
Indiana
that.
Jones, but fucking me.
Could you imagine being popular enough that when Ford hears your name as a possible Indy replacement, he stops being chilled out and just gets serious and goes, no. Like,
rolls up his sleeves.
Yeah, just think about him being like this on fucking Blade Runner 2049 interview stuff, how chill as fuck he is. And then as soon as he hears Pratt as possible,
here's Chris
Indy
Pratt
Jones,
is like, no.
His ears perk up like a dog and is like, uh-uh.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not fucking dead yet.
You're going to get at least 15 stunt doubles and we're going to do it with me. And that's it.
Oh my God.
And that just it says a lot. The power of Pratt, honest to God, in a silly sense, like,
powerful
even if he
stuff.
Was ever really going to be a possible, like if Disney actually talked to him about it, like it just shows, just the thought of it was enough to make a veteran actor go fuck yourself.
How far out do you think we are from Pratt, like trying for a reinvention or doing something that challenging? Like,
I would, the closest,
do you think he's gonna
closest,
go there?
The closest I think it would be Star-Lord's return. Because they hint in the MCU that of the
but
Guardians,
with them, they're dialing back. Their
but that wouldn't
outlook.
Be unexpected or challenging in his.
No, but that's what I'm. It's like in terms of like if they really wanted to do something short term, if they wanted to like that would be the closest thing I think of where it's like you can.
Yeah.
Because like what the fuck you would do with Star-Lord? I don't know in the MCU right now because they're lowering their input, they're shortening stuff and just like trying to figure out. A lot of things at the moment. So, like, if they could find a way to bring back Star-Lord in a way that feels unique and also almost feels like if you see the Star-Lord, it's almost like you don't have to see the films.
Yeah.
That would be, like, the earliest of, like, that is an interesting thing to do with Pratt. But even then, like, I don't necessarily really... Again, with Pratt's filmography and career, there really isn't any kind of showing of what.
Yeah, there's not like a decline yet.
He's like in his 40s to where he even would consider doing like some sort of prestige role or Oscar bait role.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like.
Or even just something, not even prestige, even just something like irreverent, like, you know, foul or crude,
like
or sideways.
The closest role. It's
not even close.
Yeah.
I mean,
villain, yeah.
The closest he got to villain role was Passengers.
Years
ago, and that wasn't it wasn't really a critical or commercial success, but
no,
it was like,
yeah,
it was also early stages of like new Pratt. So,
yeah.
but also that film was edited to shit and really made a bad decision, basically showing all of its cards in the first minutes.
Oh yeah,
and then basically making the rest of the film being like, this is uncomfortable.
This is uncomfortable. Yeah.
Why is the film ended?
Twisting at the end?
Because again, Pratt's performance in Passengers, I actually remember liking. Like,
yeah.
I think the desperation that he brings in that role. I mean, because like there's that. There's also like he plays a scoundrel type in Magnificent Seven, Fuqua's remake.
Yeah.
And that's it's not.
But it's kind of just Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
But
yeah.
like it's one of those things where it's like, I think in all honesty, it's like whatever, and it doesn't have to be a villain. But honestly, an antagonistic role is where I would be curious to see.
Yeah, or just a not inherently redeemable character.
Well, I think of like,
does he have a Black Adam in him? Like genuinely like a thing where it's like, it should be a villain, but he can't even let himself be the villain.
Yeah.
Is there even
that
in his?
Or does he have like a, you look at his Guardians co-star, Dave Bautista, who like,
you
know, he, a good chunk of his filmography are not good movies. But like he's willing to just try stuff out.
Yeah.
I think one of his like weirdest swings that like actually honestly carried the film for me was Knock at the Cabin with when Bautista did that. Like he's the best part of that whole film.
Is he?
He's playing a really weird character, but he's committing to it and trying, and it's not your typical Bautista role at all.
Yeah.
But it works so well, and like if Pratt even just tried something like that again. Which again, like what we talked about when we started this, you know, like an hour ago, was that it's like he has such a manufactured and such a very, very careful public persona and perception that he's worked for, and that's why he gets in these positions to be Garfield, to be Mario nowadays. So like if he takes the weird swing, is he going to be able to come back and do the kids movies? Because like, John Cena can do that, but that's also because John Cena was the guy. He's the Make-A-Wish guy.
And yeah.
WWE first, no matter what. So
right.
He can do something raunchy like Peacemaker or, you know, like Cock Blockers and stuff. Dave Bautista, you know, he was in WWE or whatever, but no matter what, he's the big, intimidating action star. And his swing down to the kids and stuff was Guardians. But he's also kind of doing more prestigious roles like, you know, in Dune and Blade Runner 2049 and such.
Yeah.
Pratt is very safe in the like, I'm the Coca-Cola of actors right now. I am always the safe choice.
Yeah, he's.
I'm the Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to try adding cherry syrup. You don't have to like be okay. Do the like, is Pepsi okay? You don't have to try Dr. Pepper. You don't have to do root beer. I am the solid cola that you remember when you were a kid, and you're happy with that, and you're always going to be fine with it.
Yeah, I think it's confidence. Like I think if there's anything Pratt has, it's that, because it's like.
Yeah.
With Bautista and Cena, they both, I mean, Bautista was talking about doing Dune Part 2 when, like, Villeneuve basically told him during Blade Runner, hey, you are a good actor.
Yeah.
Just work with that. I trust you. Bautista talks about that like his father finally gave him a head down to Pat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cena talks about like that when it comes to Suicide Squad and Peacemaker when it comes to Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Pratt just has that confidence of, like, yeah, no, I'm good. For sure. You will come see me.
Yeah.
And it's like, and like you said earlier, in like 18 hours ago, Andy, which is like, he is in his rock phase. It's very much like, he's like, he hasn't done a Black Adam or a Skyscraper where it's really come back to blow. Like,
yeah, he hasn't had the string of kind of cultural failures that Dwayne Johnson has had over the last couple years that led.
All of his performances have been in guaranteed commercial successes. To a degree. Like, Jurassic World's probably the worst of them.
Although I will say most of the stuff that Dwayne Johnson has done that has stopped working were in things that were on paper sure successes.
Yeah.
You know, Black Adam had everything going for it.
Absolutely.
And still sucked.
He broke his mansion gate just to get to set.
Yeah. Yep.
What? How could you not sell a film on
so that? So I'm imagining Pratt, something like that will have to happen to Pratt in order for him to kind of consider, like, well, maybe also, I'll expand thing, like, or do something different.
Some inside baseball, like, you know, a friend of mine, Jacob Cannon, who works down in Atlanta, he was, worked in the production office for Guardians 3. Pratt's also just like a genuinely good guy, unlike The Rock and stuff.
Yeah,
so
everybody
likes him.
It's not
just like, this is just who he is, so maybe when all said, like, he just doesn't feel like he has to do anything else, or he just doesn't want to, and he is just comfortable kind of like, this is where I'm at, and like, I got luckier than I probably ever could have or should have, it may be his perspective, He's just like comfortable doing that and like living his life. Who knows?
They're going to many layers to what I'm about to say in terms of just like, because he is married to this actor's daughter.
Uh-huh.
But like, I think there is a part of Pratt who looks at his father-in-law and is trying to curate his filmography in a certain way, like Schwarzenegger did, because Schwarzenegger was pretty much like the man knew what he wanted to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
So that is begs the question, I think, similar to what you're bringing up in terms on the flip side of like, what's the most interesting thing he could be doing? On the flip side, what would be Pratt's last action hero? What would be the one thing that he does that he thinks is going to be the biggest hit in the world and then just ultimately caves in a cinematic sense? And I think that'll be interesting to watch. Because with most action stars, or like, because he kind of technically is in some way, shape, or form. And like, he sees himself as that. I think he's trying to push himself as that. Like, what would be the project where he amplifies himself? And then it just, to me, it would be, like, an easy answer to that is if Paramount asked him to be in G.I. Joe. Like, I feel like if you did a G.I. Joe film with Chris Pratt, I feel like you could be, like, the studio execs are, like, buckets. But then you look at the G.I. Joe, especially you look at how Transformers is going right now. Like, it's like they want to do a Transformers G.I. Joe crossover.
Crossover,
they've already announced that. And so it's like, I could see that being a realistic, like, Pratt is Joe. In a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you build the cast around it. And like, you know, and then ultimately it just kind of like, it's not enough. Because it's like, I mean, I would never want him to really jump on a sinking ship like that. Because I, again, as someone who thinks Transformers has a lot of potential, and yet all they're doing right now is an animated film that is based off of like the fall of Cybertron in a funny way. It is fascinating to think of, like, you know, if Pratt, in a certain extent, if he truly has the confidence and almost has the feeling that he wants to do less like The Rock, but more like a Schwarzenegger kind of, you know, situation, what, like, I honestly think, like, in terms of his career, what would really, it would have to be like a surefire, quote unquote, big budget film that just for some reason just tanks. Like a, kind of like a, which, I mean.
But it's hard to, like, I don't know what that would be because, like, I don't know
that. That would have been the Tomorrow War, like on Amazon. Where
I mean,
like,
that was a flop, kind of.
Yeah, he was supposed to, like, it was supposed to be Prime's, like, big, like, one of their biggest swings into features, like, for streaming only. And really, like, and maybe I just don't know that much about Prime War, but I can't really think of anything that I've even seen just, like, in ads or anything that is Prime trying to promote. Like, films, they promote their TV more than anything.
Yeah.
I think I could trace it back probably to the Tomorrow War with it, like, just no one being interested.
The
really.
Closest they had.
The safety net of that, though, is that it is streaming. And you can just dismiss it out of hand. Anything that fails on streaming doesn't really matter.
Also, it's Amazon, which, like, Amazon's always got money. He's going to get his check cash no matter what. There's more of a risk when it's, like, something like Disney or Sony, you know, Pictures Animation.
There was nothing riding on the Tomorrow War.
No. I honestly thought the Tomorrow War was initially going to, they wanted a theatrical release.
Yeah.
And then Amazon was like, we'll pay for it. Because this is pretty much could just be a coda to our fucking Rebel Moon streaming. What the fuck is this even about? Like, it's the filmmaking situation.
Yeah.
Where it's like, the last Amazon film I saw them really push was Roadhouse a few months back.
Yeah.
Right.
Mainly because of McGregor, mainly because of the silliness of it, but also what was fascinating about that film was that in streaming, like, the reason why Roadhouse is streaming only is because they gave Doug Liman and Gyllenhaal two options. They get $60 million for a theatrical release or $80 million streaming only.
Yeah.
And so I feel like at a certain point with Tomorrow War, I think it is a vision of like they wanted Pratt.
Yeah.
Everything around that, like they will do their best to kind of do this and that, but like they are not. It was all about the persona and being like, we now have Pratt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's very similar to how like there was the Michael B. Jordan Tom Clancy film for a few years back, Without Remorse, where it's like that film came and went.
I almost said 21 Bridges.
I wanted that to be such a big hit, but like they clearly did that, I think, in a way of just like we can bring Michael B. Jordan in.
Yeah.
And it's like it's weirdly almost like an old studio system situation in a streaming sense where it's like now we have Pratt in our prime pocket.
Pratt is in the prime pocket.
Now the question is, does Prime want to produce this Pratt. Does Pratt want to produce a Prime original?
Pratimus Prime.
Does Pratimus Prime want to produce a Prime original? And if so, like, really, that was a fun tongue twister. is he willing to really go all in on streaming only 100 plus million?
A premium Pratt Prime.
Yeah.
Production.
Preliminary production. Yeah, and it's like, is it, because that's, is he willing to do the Tomorrow War, but it's entirely his own thing?
Yeah.
Because again, you could also argue with like Tomorrow War, it's like, it was, unfortunately, it was like Chris McKay's big live action, like, in introduction. And unfortunately, it's a mess of a film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the ending is fucking bonkers. But it is something that is like, as a persona, as an actor, as a person, it is going through these three films, even though while on the surface it doesn't seem like there's much to Pratt, it is fascinating to think of in the span of a decade, we have this man going from, you know, no man, construction man, who ultimately is the heart of the film, to basically, this man is just fucking Garfield, and he's doing pretty well at it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we got to that point, and whatever the next... Well,
that he's selling franchises
single-handedly,
pretty much.
And it's like, at this point, Sony hasn't even announced, like, we're doing a Garfield trilogy. And at least with the Super Mario Brothers movie doing well, like, we know we're getting a 2, and I think they want to do a Donkey Kong Country film.
Yeah.
But, like, they're not basically tying down Pratt for 6 films.
Right.
So it's like, we'll see in terms of, like, in an animation sense, that is the most interesting part about Pratt, because...
Mm-hmm.
Don't really know where else it could go other than just sequels.
Yeah.
For right now. And so it's like, it would be kind of cool to be like.
Or more like Kill List brand stuff. Just kind of like generic war stuff.
And
like,
sequels and more generic war stuff just means he doesn't have to be challenged anymore.
Yeah.
He's comfortable doing it. And again, it's just back to, it's just guaranteed money for him at this point, which I can't knock him because I'd love to be in that position too.
And honestly, and we are also just insinuating because maybe he was challenged by Mario. It doesn't show on screen, but like genuinely, if it comes to like Mario and Garfield, if he felt like the challenge I can't be Martinet and I can't be Lorenzo Music or Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If that I guess when goal, I say challenging, I mean challenging to audiences, not to Chris Pratt.
Well, nothing to challenge the audience. Give them what they want. Eat the slop.
It was a challenge to watch Super Mario Brothers, I'll tell you that.
There it is. And you know what, Andy? I think it's time. That was our... Is that the... What did you call it again? The Chris Pratt Animated Dynasty?
Chris Pratt's Animated IP Dynasty, yeah.
What a mouthful.
Yeah.
Well, it's gonna be eye-catchy when people see the title of that. But now we're going to go from a genuinely, truly odd trilogy with this one to a more standard odd trilogy that we think is really, really fun in terms of like a recent release that isn't Garfield movie. It is a film that we are, in honor of Jeff Nichols's The Bike Riders, actually getting a release date.
Yeah, finally.
Pushed back like half a year due to distribution stuff and whatnot. We're excited that our next episode, because this comes out June 1st, because we always record live. Always. on June 15th, we will be doing the Shannon Nichols trilogy.
Yes.
Which is basically the three films that writer-director Jeff Nichols has actor Michael Shannon as the lead. Yeah. Actor Michael Shannon, most people would probably know from as General Zod from Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
He's also in Premium Rush, one of Austin's favorite films.
Knives Out.
Knives Out. He's phenomenal, Knives Out. He's also in the first film I ever saw
he's
him
kind
in,
of,
Kangaroo Jack.
Yeah, he's kind of generally more of like a character actor. Yeah. But yeah, in these...
That infamous sorority letter.
That's
bit.
Very good. Yeah, he's very much... He's played a lot of bad guys in his career.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Jeff Nichols has been the one act director recently that has really used him outside of what you would think a Michael Shannon role would be.
Mm-hmm.
And those three films spanning, I believe, 2011 is when Shotgun Stories comes out. So it's Shotgun Stories, Take Shelter, and then Midnight Special. All three films where Shannon is the lead, all vastly different films. I've only seen Midnight Special all the way through, but I know just from the synopsis of the other two, they are not they are
not anything
films,
like that.
But great actors all around in there. We're excited to like really talk about Nichols, who is basically in a dynasty of his own in terms of like his father being Mike Nichols.
Yeah, right.
Who is known for many films, including The Graduate, The Birdcage, decades and decades of filmmaking. And so with Jeff Nichols, it'll be interesting to talk about how he kind of inserts himself as his own, you know, individual as a director, as well as talk about how he challenges Shannon as an actor. Because all three of us really enjoy Michael Shannon. Would you say he's in the pocket for you, Andy? Because we talk about
wallet
filled with like pictures of actors you love. It's like Frank Grillo. I think we have Mark Ruffalo in
there. Like just kind of old reliables.
Yeah, it's like you know, you see like in a film when someone opens up like or sees a picture frame on a nightstand and they smile. Like it's like all these actors and actresses that were like, if we see this person in a film, good for them. Like I like that they're there.
Yeah. I'm glad you're here. It makes me feel good that you're here.
Yeah, like I think Michael Shannon could be. I think he's in there for you. Running one of those because it's just like he's just a lot of fun and especially when he's able to just let loose in less of an antagonistic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
he's one of those workmanlike actors who I always appreciate. Who it's like they take what they do extremely seriously without taking themselves seriously.
Yes.
Very much like kind of like an Adam Driver, that sort of thing.
Which is a good thing to bring him up because Adam Driver's in Midnight Special.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Midnight Special has a wild cast. Truly a cast full of people that I would say I'm in the pocket for.
There you go.
And because I even think Take Shelter has Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh.
Or maybe it's Jessica Chastain.
You might be right.
It's Jessica Chastain. Yes.
Oh, okay. Common misconception.
No, that's on me. That was on me. That was entirely... Different career trajectories, just like a right in between. But tune in on June 15th when we discuss the Nichols Shannon trilogy.
Well, and thank you once again, Austin Webster, for joining us.
Oh yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
Absolutely, we're finally glad to have you.
My favorite character actor, old reliable Chris Pratt.
Yeah, we finally got you on an episode that will release.
Yeah,
we'll see.
No, it's not fingers crossed.
Yet. Jesus Christ, Austin! I don't want another monkey bone situation.
It's gonna be like the 9/11 of podcasts. So
tune in on June 15th when we discuss the Nichols Shannon trilogy. And as always, I'm Logan Sowan.
And I'm Andy Carr.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye.